Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.
Hello and welcome to another episode of That's So Random, a random movie podcast. I'm Heath Lambert. Request month is coming to a close, and I'm going to have to do something I've tried to, really hard to avoid doing for a long time, thanks to Lisa Gimeno, my guest. Welcome back.
I'm glad to be here.
This is your fault.
It is. I did this to you with malice aforethought. Yep.
We are talking about Rebel Moon from 2023. Zack Snyder's Netflix exclusive. And I'm preparing myself for what is bound to, I think I have probably a more even-handed approach to Zack Snyder than you probably do. So you might actually be in more trouble than me, but even it is going to be problems for me. So.
Oh, absolutely 100%. And I don't think if you spend 5 seconds on any of my social media, I think it's pretty clear that I don't like Zack Snyder's movies, which is weird because I was actually one of the few people who defended Sucker Punch and I actually liked the first 300. Oh, and I also actually liked his adaptation of Watchmen because those were all movies that were suited to what he's good at.
Thank you.
Everything else has been shitty, but those movies in particular, Sucker Punch isn't a good movie, but it's beautiful. 300 is at least faithful to what it's intended to be, except whoever put that voiceover in needs to never make another movie. And then I liked his version of Watchmen. I thought the changes they made were accurate. It was shot here. I have friends who were in it. One of my friends is Rorschach's mom. Oh, wow. You know? Yeah. And I'm proud of the stunt crew on that one because the Watchmen movie has the first bearskin burn on film. So the first time that they lit a stunt guy on fire when it was just bearskin using alcohol gel. And that's the first time it was ever done. It was done by Vancouver stunt people. Yeah. So the guy had two paths he could have taken and he took the wrong one. He took the one where he was manifestly not talented enough to make those movies. And now he's convinced that he is because of the cult. So yes, I apologize for bringing the cult down on you.
Everybody, if you found this, you're one of two kinds of people. You're either here because you want to shit on Rebel Moon, or you're here because you're ready to defend Rebel Moon. Let's start off, before we talk about Rebel Moon at all, go through the Snyder filmography a bit. Because I came into this, I spent years as kind of, apparently like you, kind of a Zack Snyder defender, even. Mm-hmm. The problem I'm going to have is that the two of his movies that I hate the most are the two these people like the most. And that's going to be where issues come from. But no, I probably came into this prepared to have a bit of a more even full-throated sort of defense of Zack Snyder. And then he went on the Joe Rogan show and said some really fucking dumb stuff. So it's hard to keep that frame of mind.
Yeah, I whatever goodwill I might have had towards Snyder, because there was, you know, stuff like, well, obviously, without getting into it, obviously the tragedy that befell him during the shooting of Justice League is something that I have nothing but compassion for, and wish him and his wife nothing but well over, and hope that they have managed to find some sort of peace and healing from that. Nothing I'm saying has anything to do with that. But any good faith I had for him as a creative talent is gone. It has been gone for years. I don't think that he is acting in good faith or in ignorance of the damage that the people who have deified him are doing and have done and are continuing to do.
I think I think he is genuinely, I mean, he's a bro. He's a bro, right? Which has its upsides and its downsides. I'm convinced he is genuinely a nice man who has the best of intentions.
Oh, you see, he's an Enrindian objectivist, so I don't believe that.
Well, I mean, there is that, which is a very stupid outlook based on a very stupid book written by a very stupid person. And there's only so much. There's that. But I mean, I think, I don't know, especially like, and we're going to get into it, especially when we talk about Sucker Punch. all of his movies, aside from his DC movies, are like, he is so, it's almost, I wouldn't call it a fixation, but he's the sexual assault and threat of sexual assault in all of his films, or I guess not the owl one either, but
his entire filmography has two films that do not feature sexual assault or the threat of sexual assault. Two, one is the Owl movie and one is Man of Steel.
Well, and he also did pretty famously say that, like, I would love to make a Batman movie where he goes to jail and gets raped. So, like, okay. But I think
there's exactly two movies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I genuinely think, I don't think he's doing it because, isn't rape awesome? Look how cool and glamorous. Because he never makes it look glamorous. He never makes it look sexy. I think he's genuinely coming from a place of, men are terrible and they do terrible things and this is the worst thing they can do. But it's falling back on the, what's the fastest way I can show that this guy's an asshole? He wants to rape somebody. Which, you know what? I've seen enough. I've seen it enough. In many movies. Many movies I've done for this show. Come up with something fucking else, man.
Here's the thing. My first book has a sexual assault in it, off page sexual assault. I will never write that again. That, like, because I realized after I wrote it, I'm like, okay, I had a reason for writing it. I'm not going to edit it out, but not doing that again, that's not going to be my lazy fallback for here's a bad thing happening. But at this point, the guy's been making movies for how long? 20 years? When you make as many movies as he has in as many different genres with as much money as he's been given, and exactly two of them, one of them an animated children movie about owls, do not feature sexual assault, I think he has a problem. I think his therapist needs to have a very long conversation with him.
Again, I genuinely think he's coming from a good place. He's just going about it the wrong way. And I would say that anything, first off, I don't need lessons about sexual assault from Zack Snyder of all people to start with, but anything he had to say worth saying about sexual assault, that's what Sucker Punch is for. That movie might as well be called Sexual Assault the Motion Picture. Once you made Sucker Punch, you can stop, man.
Yeah, any kind of comment. Yeah, any kind of comment you wanted to make about that and about agency and social pressure, you made it. You're done. You're good. You can stop now. We don't need any more. Right, that this perfectly fine. Like I said, I don't read him in as good faith as you do, but I do think he's probably a perfectly nice guy. Like, honestly, you don't continue working as much as he does in the industry if you're not at least being nice to some people. So, I mean, I don't think he's a bad human being in any way, except he went on Joe Rogan. So let me this way: he's not someone I would hang out with, but I'm sure he's not a malicious actor.
No, I think he just has some
issues,
ideas, not issues, but ideas that he's kind of stuck on. I don't know that he needs to, I guess you could say issues he needs to work past. I would say ideas he needs to work through. Maybe it's the same thing, but
yeah, I think he needs to talk to his therapist extensively.
I'm sure he has, which, and like you said, there, because there's bad people on both sides. I mean, there are if you're someone who just, I like Zack Snyder movies, and sure, I would have liked, I kind of want to see what his version of Justice League would look like. I'll do this hashtag. I got no problem with you. It's the fucking people that are still at it. Talking about sell the Snyderverse to Netflix, release the air. Stop. Stop.
Oh, my whole issue with that Snyderverse thing is the people that were going, well, it's, you know, the movie was always there. No, they spent $70 million. They shot another movie to recut it into his version of Justice League, which is terrible, by the way. I've seen the whole thing.
Well,
but anyway,
that's the other thing is, the Whedon version is terrible too. But I don't feel that the Snyder cut is appreciably better than the Joss Whedon cut.
Worse.
I think they are both equally terrible in very different ways. The difference is, with a gun to my head, you're saying you have to watch one of these two terrible movies. I'm going to pick the one that's not 5 fucking hours long. Every time.
I'll never watch the Snyder cut again.
I might watch the Joss Whedon one again, maybe. Probably not. But yeah, and I also don't need to say what you want about me. I think there are three characters. I'm cool with R-rated Blade movie. Awesome. R-rated. I think there are three characters that absolutely never, ever, ever need to or should be in an R-rated film. And those characters are Spider-Man, Superman, and Batman. Because those three characters are icons to children all over the world. It doesn't mean you can't do mature stories, but you can do that within the confines of the PG-13. There's absolutely no reason ever that a child should have to say, Daddy, can I watch the new Batman movie? And their parent says, no, it's rated R. That is ludicrous.
The two most mature movies Marvel ever put out were Black Panther and Captain America Winter Soldier, and they're both PG-13, and they are both brutal. I still flinch during parts of Black Panther just because of the dialogue, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, those are brutally intelligent movies that are like, but it's just the whole thing. It's like, my thoughts on this is, as, and this is a misquote of another film critic, making an R-rated movie of Superman is the exact same, is exactly as ludicrous as making an R-rated Winnie the Pooh. Oh, hang on. Didn't we just do that?
Yeah. It's just,
those
aren't characters that need, you could, if you want to make an R-rated Iron Man movie, even, I don't care. Because when
make an
Iron Man,
Wonder Woman movie,
at the time when Iron Man came out, like now it's different, but when the first Iron Man movie came out, other than hardcore comic nerds, nobody gave a shit about Iron Man. You could have made that movie rated R and that wouldn't bother me, because no kids aren't rushing out to see Iron Man in the first place until later. But
it was the word of mouth that got that. Here's the thing. I would have wanted to make an R-rated Black Widow movie, and I already knew what it was going to be. I would have made an R-rated Black Widow movie that was survival horror.
Yeah,
that was just Black Widow versus the Red Room. And I would have done it where Bucky was the damsel in distress at the end. She's going to save him. And it's just, you could make an absolutely brutal R-rated Black Widow survival horror, which is just her versus the environment, her versus the Red Room, with just some amazing set pieces with that character. And all it would be a travelogue for getting from A to B, and you could just do the most amazing set. That movie would have been great. I had that movie ready, but, you know, too late now. That being said, I do kind of like Black Widow. But
yeah, there are characters I feel that it's totally fine to do that with. And I think there are at least three that absolutely not.
No, absolutely. And I would actually argue in some ways I wouldn't make an R-rated Flash movie either, but
I just don't think you need to. Like, what in the Flash needs to be, unless it's just, I like to say the F word a bunch. Like, I do too, but like, it doesn't need to be.
No, an R-rated Superman movie is it. And here's the thing. I don't even really like Superman. I don't really even like Superman. And we're kind of getting off of your pace here, and obviously you can edit a bunch of this out.
Oh, it's fine. I'm prepared for this episode to be long. You know, I say all that, but I've actually been a big proponent for a long time that I know that Jurassic Park and Jurassic World have traditionally been family films, but they're also, in spots, pretty brutal horror films. And I've always thought, I have no more interest in Jurassic World, nothing, keep it. But what I would like to see is a hard R-rated Jurassic Park movie where it's like the world governments are like, enough of these fucking dinosaurs. They keep escaping. We're sending in the Marines and SEAL Team 6, and we're going to go from one side of the island to the other and kill every dinosaur we see. So it's like Aliens with Space Marines, but it's Marines versus dinosaurs for 2 hours. Brutal, bloody, gory. That I want to see. Otherwise...
Yeah.
That's kind of the only family-friendly thing that I'm like, no, ramp it up.
Fair. So, but anyway, back to Zack Snyder's film.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning. Dawn of the Dead. A movie Written by James Gunn. Which some people love to forget that they're, like, buddies. Yeah, and that's one that I went to. I'm not even necessarily a fuck all remakes guy. There's some really good remakes. But that's when I went into, like, come on, Dawn of the Dead, really? Like, that's like a flawless, like, you know, there's no reason to but I came out of it going, that was pretty cool. It's different, but I like it. I like it too. Probably, I'm not as much as the original, probably, but Dawn of the Dead, really good.
Yeah, I like Dawn of the Dead too. I like Dawn of the Dead because it had a coherent script.
But see, that's the thing. There's other things. There's times that he really starts to win me back where he's like,
yep.
He said a thing, maybe it was on Rogan, but he said a thing where, like, I want to do a sequel to 300 and I want to make it the gayest movie you've ever seen. And I'm like, yeah, man, that'll piss off a lot of your, like, a lot of people, you know, I'm all go for it, man. But then he says shit like, yeah, probably Rebel Moon got seen by more people than Barbie, which is delusional nonsense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're out of your fucking mind if you believe that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just like that. Yeah. Yeah. No. But it's just like, that's a specific choice. If he had said Oppenheimer, that would have been a different choice, right? He makes a specific choice to contrast his movie, which is, we'll get into what it is later, with a movie that was ostensibly and visibly about female empowerment in a way that makes it antagonistic. That's not unintentional, I don't think.
Well, the reason it came up on on the Rogan thing was because he asked him about the Snyder cut joke in Barbie, and this is where he starts to win me back. He's like, "Oh, I love that. That's awesome." I was sitting there watching Barbie. He's like, "Did they just say my name? That's so cool." He wasn't mad about it. He thinks that's cool. And I'm like, "Way to go, man!" And then he follows it up with, "But probably more people watch Rebel Moon than Barbie." And I'm like, "Dude, come the fuck on."
Yeah,
you lost me again. I don't disagree.
Occasionally he says stuff like he's gone on live streams and called out the toxic fans, but then he's immediately turned around and played into the toxic fans. So it's just like, I think he's either that sort of delusionally unself-aware of what he's doing, or it's deliberate. Like, there really is nothing in between to me, but it's just like, yeah, I mean, he can be a good sport about a lot of stuff. I don't think you get to where you are without being, but I don't know. Anyway, sorry, go ahead. Go on.
No, you're right. And he is definitely, like, he plays into it to the extent of, like, well, here's Rebel Moon, and then wait a couple months, and there'll be the Rebel Moon, the Snyder Cut. And it's like, what? Shut the fuck. Just, it's Netflix. You don't have any boundaries. If you want to do a four-hour version of Rebel Moon, Netflix will do it. They have however long The Irishman was. Like, just give them the whole movie, and they'll show it. You don't need to do this fake anticipation of, like, just wait, though.
They're essentially doing a 10-hour version of Shogun right now. I mean, like, it's all good, man. Like, you know, anyway. It's streaming. People can turn it on and off as they wish. Just release the movie you want to release, okay?
Yeah. Dawn of the Dead. Then, and he started out, he did, like, some more CD music videos. He did Soul Asylum, Somebody to Shove video, which I certainly remember seeing a lot.
I will say this about the man days. As I've had this conversation with friends who are directors about Zack Snyder, he is one of the most visually gifted directors on the planet right now. He can do visuals in ways that I think are both unique and beautiful, which is why some aspects of Rebel Moon really shocked me. But I'm like, he was born to be a cinematographer and a music video director because he is absolutely brilliant at that.
Not a storyteller.
No, he should have nothing to do with story, creative development, or direction. He should be the cinematographer to somebody who actually knows how to structure narrative and can tell him no. He needs somebody who can do that. If he had somebody who's just like, all you're doing is visuals, he can even call himself a director, and all he does is the visuals. He does sets up shot. I'm doing all the story stuff, and can tell him no, he'd probably make brilliant movies.
That's possible. Yeah, 300 was next. Which was a movie I certainly loved a lot when it came out. I think watching it now, I think it's pretty dumb. But it
saw twice in theater.
But visually, it is fascinating to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And it did the thing. And the only other movie that's done this are the Sin City movies, where we don't need a script. Here's the graphic novel. There's your script. There's your storyboards. Go.
Yep.
And I don't need that. I don't want that for every comic book movie. But man, it works for 300, and man, it works for Sin City. That first, I don't like the second one at all. But that first Sin City movie rules.
The first Sin City movie is great. The second one is actually mediocre at best. The thing about 300 as a movie is they got really good actors for starters. They hit all the right notes because those were the notes that were on the page of the graphic novel. And then my issue is that voiceover, particularly right at the end, where they put a voiceover to talk about everything that the main actor is doing with his face. And I'm just like, you didn't need the voiceover, man. Like, I don't know why you're insulting my intelligence with that voiceover.
Yeah, that's tell not show, which is the opposite of what you want.
Yeah, like every single thing the voiceover is saying is what he's doing. He's just doing it, right? And I'm just like, oh, that to me, that was when I think I first started to get a little bit, I'm not sure about this, because that was such a, to me, that was telling the audience, I think you're too stupid to understand acting. And I don't know whether that was him or a suit. Could have been a suit, because suits are notoriously bad at storytelling, so.
Well, especially that early in his career, he probably didn't have nearly as much control over stuff, so.
But it is a beautiful movie.
And then, this third movie, and for some reason, I thought it was later in the filmography. Like, I thought there was something else in between. But his third movie is Watchmen, a movie that... But the fact that he got Watchmen made just on the strength of 300 is kind of impressive considering Terry Gilliam spent 20 years trying to make Watchmen. And I promise you this. I know I like Terry Gilliam too. Most of his stuff. Not all of it. I promise you the Terry Gilliam Watchmen movie would not, probably not have been good at all. And if it had, it would not be as good as the Zack Snyder one. I'm telling you right now.
No, I agree. I don't like Terry Gilliam very much these days, in particular since he's turned into a transphobic racist.
About his film output.
I've never been the biggest fan of Terry Gilliam. I know that that's kind of heresy among the film crew, but I've never been a big fan of him or his films. I didn't like Brazil. I'm one of those people that was like, I didn't enjoy that movie at all. And I didn't particularly enjoy Baron Munchausen. I think he is somebody who needs people who can tell him no, because I think he did his best work when he had someone who could take control of his movies. Because Baron Munchausen just kind of like stops. It doesn't really end. And so Terry Gilliam's Watchmen would have been almost unimaginably bad. And it was exactly the correct movie for Zack Snyder's aesthetic and his abilities. It's the right movie, except I think he screwed up Rorschach's scene in the jail, but that's just about it.
Here's the thing about Watchmen, and here's why it's so impressive to me. I understand, as someone who's been reading Watchmen for decades, that Zack Snyder deeply misunderstands many of the aspects of the plot and characters of that film. And if that's not something you can get past as a viewer, I get it. I understand why people don't like that movie. Here's why I do. Right before that movie came out, I reread the Watchmen comic. And then there was also, at that time, they put out a Watchmen motion comic where it was all 12 issues. It was each issue sort of, you know, minimal sort of animation and voiceovers for all the dialogue. And each episode of that was like 25 to 30 minutes long. And I watched all that and I did the math and I went, wow, that's almost 6 hours. Zack Snyder's Watchmen is going to be 3 hours. That means half of Watchmen will be missing from this movie. This is going to be terrible. Even if you take out the Black Freighter stuff and the flashbacks, like that still should be a 5-hour movie by all rights. And he's doing it in three. This is going to be bad. And then I'm sitting there watching the movie, waiting for missing scenes, waiting for stuff that I just saw in the motion comic to not be there. And it keeps not happening. And I got to the end of the movie and I went, hold on. The only scene from the comic that is not in the movie is the trick-or-treaters coming in and beating Old Man Night Owl to death on Halloween night.
Yep. And it's the extended version, which is actually, I think, better, even better than the
actual. And I'm like, how the fuck did he do that? I don't understand how that math works. How did you visual take media 5 hours of material and fit it into 3 hours? That is a miracle.
Yeah, this is the power of visual storytelling, is because you can cinematically tell stories faster than even something like a motion comic can, because you could just do beats, beats, beats. It particularly shows up in the Ozymandias fight scene, which is the best use of Zack Snyder's signature slow-mo that he's ever done, because you can actually see the way they staged it, the way they shot it. You see him deliberately moving behind people to get them shot. You actually see his action. It's not random. He is deliberately moving to get people shot by this guy, because that's how fast his mind works. And I'm like, that is absolutely one of the most brilliant pieces of work I've ever seen in a movie. And hands down, I will defend that scene hands down forever. Like that is possibly that's the best use of slow motion in a fight scene I've seen in a long time. And it is absolutely one of the most beautiful pieces of visual storytelling, because without a single word of dialogue, you know exactly what Ozymandias is doing in a very emotionally complex situation.
And I will defend the changes that were made as far as the ending, instead of the alien invasion thing that Alan Moore, well, I don't want to say came up with, since he also stole that from an episode of Outer Limits or one of those.
I think so. The squid was not viable to do in that format at that time.
Well, not only would it take up too much real estate in a film to explain all that, it would look kind of silly in live action as opposed to a drawing, but also Dr. Manhattan's right there. It makes more sense in a story to blame it on him. Like, all the pieces were there. Adding the alien thing is like this extra three steps that you don't need.
Yeah,
I feel it's so much more streamlined.
It's actually a better narrative choice because it actually drives Manhattan's story even further. Manhattan,
I
the only
agree.
person in the entire, the only person who has actual superpowers, he would be the sole singular threat
I
in that
agree.
Universe. It drives his story even better.
Mm-hmm. It makes so much more sense and works so much better as like compact, you know, efficiency of storytelling to just blame it on Dr. Manhattan. He's right there. Like, I actually think that change is really good.
It's a great change. And as I said, my only issue with that whole thing is I thought that he directed Jackie Earle Haley in the "I'm not in here with you, you're in here with me." I think that's delivered wrongly. I think that direction of that scene is bad because it's rushed at the end. He shouts it as the guards are pulling him away. And that moment needed to be a cool, calm beat. That needed to be a sign. Like, I would have done it as him just saying that out loud with no background noise. Just his words, and then he gets dragged away. That's to me the most egregious mistake that was made in that was you rushed Rorschach's best line.
And I also that movie's also really well cast. Like, everybody,
it's brilliantly cast. Everyone's good.
Man, it's good stuff. So yeah, Watchmen is a movie I will always defend. I love that movie. I think it's his best movie by a mile.
And the director's cut is better than the theatrical cut. I've seen both. The director's cut doesn't add a lot more time, and it's better. And like, I agree 100%. I will defend Watchmen. Here's the thing. The tone, the storytelling, and the energy of Watchmen matches Zack Snyder's aesthetic. He completely 100% didn't understand who the bad guy was in that movie. Because like I said, he made a movie where the only two characters who have moral or ethical integrity are a serial killer and a genocidal madman.
Yeah, which apparently a lot of people who don't make movies and who just read Watchmen also still to this day do not understand.
Yep.
There's still a lot of people who think Rorschach's real fucking cool.
They
no,
profoundly missed the point. Yeah. No, Rorschach is a serial killer. He's a terrible, terrible person. He's a right-wing repellent, you know, like, he's a fairly loyal friend. That's about the only thing about him that's good, is that he's a reasonably loyal friend, but that's about it.
But yeah, love Watchmen, and it also led to, because I'm me, probably really the best thing Zack Snyder has ever directed, which is a My Chemical Romance music video for Desolation Row.
Yeah, that's a great video.
Great, great cover, great song, my favorite band. Yeah. Good stuff.
He's an unparalleled visuals director. He should just do music videos now for the rest of his life. He would go down in history as the greatest music video director in history. Yeah.
Then was Owls, what is it, Legend of the Guardians? The Owls
Ghul. Owls of
Ghul. Which, on paper, you say Zack Snyder, computer animated movie about owls wearing armor fighting each other. I'm like, that sounds like the best movie ever. And it is so goddamn boring. Like, I cannot believe, with that premise and those visuals, how unspeakably dull that movie is.
I have never made it all the way through the movie. That's how dull it is. I've never made it all the way through.
Wild how boring that movie is. It shouldn't be. So that was the first, for me, his first miss. That was his first, like, okay, buddy, maybe animation's not for you. I don't know. I don't know what went wrong, but that movie's not good. And you know it's not good. Because even like the most diehard Snyder people who won't shut up about Snyder this, Snyder that, I've never seen someone on Twitter mention the Owls of Ghul and hold it up as like, see Zack Snyder, he's the blueprint for animation too, or any of that shit. Like, I've never seen someone mention Owls of Ghul. So even they know, like, no. After that one is Sucker Punch, a movie that, again, I get why people like it. I get why people don't like it. I think he was going for a thing, and your mileage may vary as to how well he pulled that thing off as far as its morality and its issues and things like that. But again, visually, I saw the trailer for that movie, and I remember going, wow, it's like someone reached into my head and pulled out everything in the world that I like. It's hot girls with swords and guns fighting Nazi zombies, dragons, and a giant samurai robot with a chain gun. This is the best movie of all time. But the trailer didn't show any of the we're sitting around in an asylum getting any of that stuff, the lobotomies and the sexual assault. That's where you're watching it and going, oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, I will give him this. The lead actress to that, who was in the Lemony Snicket movies, does credit him as being the reason why she stayed in acting, because he was so kind to her. So I'll give him that. I'd like to note that that's actually a co-write. That's a co-production as well, because he co-wrote that with somebody. So he directed it, did all the beautiful visuals, and someone else wrote it, which would explain why some of the story was probably not terrible. And I kind of get what he was trying to go for with Sucker Punch. I get it. I think he failed, but I think an admirable failure is a noble thing in and of itself. I think he was trying to make a point that he is not mentally or narratively capable of making. I think if you made that movie now with him just directing and somebody else writing it, I think you might get something that was just as beautiful and actually told a better story, and where the character actually had agency that wasn't just to get lobotomized, you know? But I think I get what he was trying to say. I just think he failed to say it. That would be my take on that movie.
Yeah, exactly. I think that even as bad as media literacy is right now, mm-hmm. for a lot of people, as hard as much of a struggle as it is, I still think that people can watch Sucker Punch and come out of it with two very different. It's like half the people watch it think that's misogynistic garbage, and the other half go, no, that's like a super like feminist. You know, it's pretty even. And that tells me there's a level of not even purposeful ambiguity to your movie. It's just you did not have clarity of storytelling to get across exactly what you're trying to say, because it should be clear to everyone what you're trying to
say. Here's my whole thing. And I feel the same way about a lot of comic books. I feel the same way about Watchmen, is if people don't understand that something is trying to be a parody, you have failed. People who like it, this whole thing is this is some reasons why so many stories were like, well, that character is obviously a parody of him. Like, here's a problem. It's not obviously a parody enough, because people think that character is the hero. So you have failed at the aspect
Homelander.
Of parody. You're not
Homelander.
Yeah, Homelander. Yeah, exactly. Oh, don't get me started on The Boys. We'll be here all night.
I have not seen a second of it, which is wild, because I own every issue of that comic book and I have not seen one hot second of that show.
The entire thing is just a ripoff of Penthouse Comics. 100%. There was a porn superhero comic published in Penthouse Comics. And it was published before The Boys, the comic came out. I have read all of them, and I guarantee you The Boys was a ripoff of that comic. I will go to my grave with that assertion, but that's beside the point. So that's my whole thing about, like, if you were trying to make a point about misogyny or agency or the misogyny of the world, all that, great. And I kind of see where you were trying to make it, but yeah, exactly. Either your storytelling was muddied or your idea was muddied. And so you failed at it. That being said, I would prefer that people shot for those stars and failed to reach them than just made, you know,
sure,
the same thing over and over again. So I don't, like I said, I will defend Sucker Punch without saying that if it makes you uncomfortable, like I'm in this position right now with Poor Things, which is I see a lot of people defending Poor Things, and I've watched it and I'm like, I genuinely don't give the director as much credit as people are giving it. So I'm like, I'm in that position where I'm just like, I get people are saying Poor Things is feminist. I don't think it is. And I can give you reasons why, but that's not this show. I think that's the same issue with Sucker Punch. I can see why. I can see both sides of the coin. And I tend to fall to he was trying to do the good thing and fail, as opposed to trying to do the bad thing and then accidentally didn't, is, you know, right, the way that I look at it. Yeah. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with a noble failure. I think that's actually something to be proud of.
And at the end of the day, for me, Sucker Punch is just, and maybe I have a baby brain, I don't know, but just there's a lot of real cool looking stuff in there. And that's sometimes that's good enough. Sometimes that's good enough. You can turn it on and just look at cool stuff.
It's absolutely beautiful. The interstitials dream sequences are absolutely, absolutely beautiful, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Absolutely gorgeous filmmaking. 100%.
But maybe they should just be music videos.
Exactly.
The next is Man of Steel. And I'm still with him at this point. And I'm still with him. Man of Steel does enough of what I want from a Superman movie, and did enough stuff that I've always wanted in a Superman movie and hadn't gotten before, that I'm willing to overlook some places where it misses the mark. Like the Pa Kent thing is dumb as shit and just wrongheaded. And the him killing Zod thing, you can argue that back and forth. But it does do a lot of things that I'm like, okay, this is not my favorite Superman movie, but this is a good start. I can't wait to see what Man of Steel 2 is going to look like. And that didn't happen. But no, but I remember watching like the third Matrix movie, and there's Neo and Agent Smith. They're punching each other through buildings and flying around. And I'm like, this right here is what a goddamn Superman movie should look like. And I've never gotten that. And Man of Steel brings that shit. And I was like, here we go.
Man of Steel is a great comic book movie. It is a terrible Superman movie. That's the thing. If it was anyone but Superman, you're okay. But because it's a Superman movie, it completely misses the mark. Right? And it's like, I mean, I'm sorry. That movie lost me at Magic Russell Crowe. I love Russell Crowe. But Magic Russell Crowe. Yeah. I barely remember those ships. But yeah, Magic Russell Crowe is where they lost me. Yeah.
But so coming out of Man of Steel, I'm like, you know, I'm still on board with Zack Snyder. Bring on Man of Steel 2. And then they announce Batman v Superman. And I lost my mind because I've been reading comics since I was a little child. I've waited my whole life for this. Just like if you went back in time and told 9-year-old me, hey, not only is there going to be a Captain America and a Thor and a, you know, then they're going to get together and there's going to be an Avengers movie, I would have kicked you in the shin and called you a liar because no way.
Yeah, me too.
My life's not that good.
No, no one can finally make a Captain America movie.
I'm finally going to get Batman and Superman together. I kind of would have liked to have Man of Steel 2 and maybe a Batman solo movie first. This feels a little rushed, but okay. And I went into that movie so stoked. And I will tell you, sitting in the theater, it was just me and my now wife. And at what I thought was surely almost the end, I looked at the clock on my phone to discover that the movie was only half over. And so far, I have hated every goddamn second of it. And I turned to my wife and I just said, I'm sorry. Like from the bottom of my heart, legitimately apologized to her that because you're with me, you're not at home doing whatever the fuck else. Instead, you're here halfway through this.
You're not at home staring at a wall.
It is the most angry and most disappointed I have ever been walking out of a movie theater.
Mm-hmm. You get one shot at killing Superman.
It is
one
a
shot.
Fundamental misunderstanding of Superman, a fundamental misunderstanding of Batman. Just the idea that we're finally seeing Batman and Superman on screen together. For the first time ever. And the entire movie is about them wanting to kill each other. Is so fucked in the head. The idea. I don't care what happened to a Wayne Tower building in Metropolis. Blah, 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 whatever. No Batman that I have ever seen or will ever acknowledge is going to see Superman for the first time. And instead of thinking, I need to go talk to that guy and see what his deal is. Or I'm going to spy on him for a week and see what his deal is. His first thought is, I have to fucking kill that guy. And the first instinct when Superman learns there's a Batman is, I need to fucking kill that guy. That is insanity. What the fuck are you doing?
Oh, yeah. No, it is possibly the most fundamental misunderstanding of characters, of beloved characters that I have encountered in a long time.
Because you hear people talk about like, oh, they lost me at the Martha thing. The Martha thing is the least of my fucking problems with that movie. That moment, at least, it's kind of dumb, but I understand it. What I don't understand is the lifetime I waited to see these two characters on screen together, and they can't even have a goddamn conversation because they just want to kill each other because Zack Snyder read 3 pages of Dark Knight Returns and went, there's your movie. No, sir, yeah. You need more than that.
Yeah. The Martha thing on paper works. If you're playing that to a board of executives, it's beautiful. But as I've said over and over again, execution trumps concept. The concept of that movie is at least interesting, but the execution is so bad, it can't be brought back. Because as I said, exactly. And then when you look at the director's cut that features Jimmy Olsen being brutally murdered, I was like, okay, I'm done. Because the cameraman at the beginning is Jimmy
yeah,
Olsen.
Yeah, I know. Which you'll
and
find
I'm like,
out.
Yeah,
which you vaguely learn in the theatrical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, and it's just that there's so many little things that are wrong in that movie. And I don't like nitpicking things, but I'm also just like Lex Luthor got together a creative licensing team to make up logos for all these weird superheroes that haven't been discovered yet. Okay. That seems interesting.
Well, and then there's the whole you know what?
Yeah.
Again, like I said, Superman and Batman, yes, they can be for adults too, but they are primarily, and you can say they're not, but they are children's characters for children.
Yeah.
And in this movie, where these two iconic children's characters are meeting for the first time and trying to kill each other for no good goddamn reason, Lex Luthor blows up Holly Hunter with a jar of his own piss.
Yep.
In what should be a fucking children's film.
Yep. Yep.
And I've lost my mind. What are we doing?
There were so many choices in that movie that were badly made.
Edgelord shit.
It is impossible to you could and I mean Movie Bob spent 6 hours on it. You can spend 6 hours on that movie just going through point by point as it stops and starts 3 or 4 times. There's at least 3 beginnings and 4 endings. And I'm sorry, I don't like Henry Cavill. I don't think he can act, and I think that these movies proved it. He's horrific in these movies. And here's the thing: is again, it's ugly. Bits of it are pretty. A lot of it is just gray and brown layered on top of each other. So I'm like, wow, Zack Snyder didn't even make a pretty movie for this one. It's mostly just really ugly, you know, and stupid and weirdly empty. You know, like the thing at the Capitol, nobody's there. There's like 20 protesters. That should be a sea of people. God is coming to talk to the Senate, basically. There should be 100,000 people in that. From a filmmaking perspective, as a filmmaker, it made no sense. Every single scene in that movie made no sense. There's a couple things about it that are pretty good. I mean, Gal Gadot, I don't particularly like her very much, but she has a good entrance. As I've said, the only way that movie would have been saved to me is if when they deliver the incredibly bad, cheesy lines, she with you, I thought she was with you, is if her response would have been shut the fuck up and then broke both their necks. That would have been a good movie to me.
Well, no, I would have been like, also whoa. Just the audacity for Snyder fans to, not Snyder fans, Snyder freaks, cultists. Like the real, that word.
Yeah.
To talk about quote unquote Marvel sense of humor, Marvel jokes, when fucking BVS has that line in it, go eat shit.
Yep. You're
crazy.
At least Marvel stuff's actually funny. I've laughed out loud at Marvel stuff.
Anyways, yeah. Mm-hmm. BVS, a movie that if anyone on the planet Earth should have loved, it was me. And I hated every second of it. And that's where I lost my good vibes for Zack Snyder. Then he's doing Justice League, and I'm like,
You get one shot to kill Superman, and you ruined it. You threw away your one shot in for a generation to kill Superman, and I felt nothing.
Here's how much I hated that movie Superman is. When Justice League came out, even knowing, Zack Snyder didn't even do this one now. Like, Joss Whedon took over, and I've liked a lot of Joss Whedon's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see Justice League in the theater, which again, if you went back in time and told little Heath, not only is there going to be a Justice League movie, you're not going to give a shit. You're not going to go see it in the theater, and you work at a movie theater and could go see it for free. And you're still not going to go.
My first two heroes were Batman and Wonder Woman. And I'm like, DC made me hate Batman and Wonder Woman.
How much I hate BVS is that I didn't even bother to watch Justice League until it came out on home video.
Yep.
Wild shit.
The extended cut is not better. It is, in fact, worse. It's less of a movie, believe it or not.
But see, and this is where, but these are the two, for whatever reason, they've latched on to, the people we're talking about have latched on to BVS specifically and Justice League Snyder Cut specifically as the two, and they are not only not his two best films, they're probably his two worst films. Other than, I guess, The Owls of Ga'Hoole is bad, but...
It is arguable that Batman versus Superman is bad in an epic way that only somebody who could have made a good movie can make a bad movie. That movie is such a... It is bad on every level. It's bad storytelling. It's bad cinematography. The soundtrack is bad. The acting is bad. But it is bad because it is both a disappointment and a betrayal of the potential of those characters in that story. And the same thing with Justice League. And but as somebody has pointed out, there's the comic which you've probably seen, which is the you know, the Marvel plan for their superhero universe, and it's this long whiteboard with, you know, connecting dots and people sitting around very thoughtfully talking about scripts, and then they're like, and then the Warner Brothers plan, it's a dark room with a blender, and then they just throw everything into a blender.
Well, and that's, you know? Yeah, the chase, yeah. And it's not just DC that did this. A lot of other things have done this, but the chase
the Mummy
to,
movie.
We have the Dark Universe Mummy nod, and our third attempt at doing Dracula, a dark universe.
Yeah.
But the chase to, we have to catch up to Marvel without understanding what Marvel did right to make it work. Putting the pieces in place. And Justice League is a perfect example of that.
Because 10 years.
You had one Superman movie, or one and a half Superman movies, and half a Batman movie, and next is Justice League. You fucked up.
One Wonder Woman movie, one and a half Superman movies, half a Batman movie, and you think that that somehow earns you the Avengers.
Real dumb.
You can argue that you could maybe half that for the DC characters, because at the time, the DC characters were still had more of name recognition. You could have it, but you have to give at least everybody at least a solo movie of their own, guys.
Yeah, maybe not Cyborg, maybe not Flash, because there's been a there's been a Flash TV show, people know, but you know.
Yeah. You could Flash and Wonder Cyborg.
I love that first Wonder Woman movie. I love a lot. I like it. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, don't go back and think about that movie too hard. Let's just put it that way. If you love that movie, don't think about that movie too hard.
I rewatch it every once in a while.
I
like it just fine. The second one is garbage, but
The second one is terrible. I actually hated the first one myself, but that's not something to get into. That's just a very personal thing. That's one of those things where it's just like, I think I can make a cogent and intelligent argument as to why the first one's actually pretty bad. But at the time, I cried when I watched it. So it had the effect that it intended. You know?
It also that movie fooled me into thinking that Gal Gadot is talented and charming, which subsequent Gal Gadot films relieved me of, because
it's the unearthly diction.
Incredibly unearthly, terrible actress.
Oh yeah, it's the unearthly diction, right? That diction fools you to thinking she can
and
act.
She looks the part so much, and yeah, that first movie is like so charming, and like subsequent anyways.
Yeah, subsequent outings have proved that that may have been a fluke.
Oh, okay, we're still doing this. The next is obviously he started filming Justice League. Horrible fucking thing happened, and I will say, I meant to say this. I started saying this earlier about bad people on both sides. Yeah, there's a lot of Snyder cultists who do reprehensible shit and say reprehensible shit to people behind the anonymity of the internet. The mindless Snyder haters can be just as bad. And let me tell you something: if you are a person who, in your desperate need to shit on Zack Snyder, bring up, joke about his daughter's suicide, you are human shit.
Yeah.
And I hope you get hit by a train. Literally.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's
you're
legal
a garbage
to, it's legal
person.
To wish. It's legal to wish harm. It's legal to wish harm. So I wish that they are harmed in some
There's
way.
There's absolutely no excuse for that. I cannot imagine, as a father myself, like, don't even have to be a father to feel.
Yeah.
What a fucking nightmare that is.
Yeah.
And I feel for them, and that is absolutely not ammunition in an
it's
argument
not ammunition,
about
but here's
fucking
the thing,
movies. Stupid.
It's not a shield either, and that's one of my actual major problems with the Snyder Cut people is a lot of them are like, who bring that up as a shield, and I'm like, here's the thing, man. His personal tragedy is a personal tragedy, and I have nothing but compassion for him, and if I was his friend, if I knew him at the time, I would have been, had nothing but compassion for him. The fact that he had a personal tragedy doesn't make his movies any better. But that being said, the fact that he had a personal tragedy is not something that you ever bring up or mention in the context of his career. Shut up. You are an evil, disgusting, vile maggot of a human being if you do that.
Yeah. But he did wind up, and I'm glad, as annoying as the hashtag shit was, if it had stopped, I mean, the problem is it kept going. But if it had...
Yeah, they
gave
them what they want. So like little babies, they continue to whine.
That's the thing. I'm glad... on a personal level, that this man, Zack Snyder, got to finish the movie. Again, I don't think the movie is any better than it was before, just longer and bad in different ways. But I'm glad for him and the people who like his stuff that he got to come back and finish that. That's a rare thing, and that's cool. Then you shut up.
Yeah. My whole thing with that is they spent $70 million in that movie, and that's seven movies that someone who isn't a straight white guy could have gotten to make movies. $10 million a movie.
Is not a veritable remake of a movie that people didn't like in the first place. Like, that does seem like a waste of money, but good for him. I'm glad for him. But then it's time to stop. And the issue that my big, and I'm not even going to talk about the movie because the movie is such a shrug to me. Like, that movie's just meh. Such a big wet fart shrug of a movie that's very long. But the precedent that it's set for if you whine enough, we will listen to you is anti-art. It's different than, like, for instance, right now, if you look at what's going on in the Spider-Man comic books put out by Marvel Comics, where literally everyone who reads Spider-Man comics hates everything you're doing, and you double down on them as if to stick a middle finger to your fans, that's different
Oh yeah. It still
than
sucks.
a small but very loud group of people who just won't stop, and they're just flooding everything, and you give them what they want, and in your stupid executive head, you thought, well, now they'll shut up because you're an idiot. That anyone with a brain knows that's not what's going to happen. They're going to go, yay, we won. Let's ask for more stuff. That's why you don't
Yeah.
negotiate with terrorists.
Exactly. This is so it was during that period when I got into the worst the big period leading up to the movie where I got into the worst clashes online with the Snyder cultists. This is when I got death threats, I got rape threats, I got a whole bunch of stuff. Like just it was constant for a few weeks and then periodic after that. But it was during this period where I used the term film language in a tweet. You know what film language is, right? It's the way the
Sure.
camera moves to show. Yeah, okay. And one of the Snyder cultists who had co-executive producer of Justice League in his bio, like the people who donated to a GoFundMe put in,
Okay.
actually came back to me and said, "It's called dialogue, you dumb effing C-word."
Like I said, man, media literacy is.
I think about that tweet about once a week. I think about that about once a week. And it was also, oh, that was also during the period when I had a Snyder cultist, when I pointed out that they shot minutes and minutes worth of new footage for this. It's not, the movie was not completed. They shot $70 million worth of new stuff for it. They made a whole nother movie. And he's like, well, come on. It was only like this much time. How long can that take to shoot? Like an hour? And I'm like, you've never worked on a film set, have you?
No, to the point that because when the Snyder Cut came out, I watched for the second time the Joss Whedon version immediately before, and then watched. So that was a long day for me, and then watched the Snyder Cut so that I could compare and contrast for myself. And there are scenes of dialogue that are exactly the same, except that Zack Snyder spent time and money to reshoot them just so there wouldn't be a frame of Joss Whedon footage in his film. That's a waste of money. You shot an entire new film. Like, stop saying that it's like,
You shot $70 million worth of a new movie. Okay, that's an entirely new movie, and it's just and that was my issue with the whole thing. Like, again, you know what? I don't disagree with you. If it was that important to him creatively, I'm actually okay with the idea that someone gets to complete their creative work. I think that he was obviously in a position of enormous privilege to be allowed that, and it was granted under very poor circumstances. And I do wish that he had spoken up more and more strongly about it, saying, "Hey, look, I'm really grateful that I got to do this, but you guys need to stop." Like he needed to say to them, you need to stop doing this because this has become so toxic. You're actually hurting me and my family and my brand. And he did the exact opposite. He actually egged them on multiple occasions. So that's one of the reasons why I don't have a lot of good feeling about Zack Snyder as a person. But it's just, I did almost the same thing that you did. I didn't do it in the same day, but I did it very close in back because I'd watched the original, I watched the Zack Snyder Justice League, or sorry, the Joss Whedon Justice League, and I thought it's the worst thing Joss has ever done. And right after it, we got the reveal that Joss was being an absolute fucking monster on set and has been a monster in the past and the whole thing. I'm like, and as a consequence, I will not support Joss Whedon any further. Doesn't change the fact that I still think Avengers and Age of Ultron are great movies, but and then I saw the Zach one and I'm like, I don't know how you add an hour and a half of footage to a film and make it worse. Like, the Joss one is, again, at least a movie. It's a bad movie, but it's at least got a, if there's a narrative structure to it, you know? Whereas there's five, like literally 2 minutes of Nordic women singing Aquaman off. Like, okay, I don't think anybody
Yeah.
needed that.
Well, I mean, if you took if all the slow motion in that film ran at normal speed, it would only be 45 minutes long. So it would actually be way shorter.
Oh, see, it breaks my heart because I actually like it when people use slow motion in fight scenes, but you got to do it for a reason and it has to have a purpose. And he just does it on everything now because that's his thing. You know, I'm like, oh, Christ.
Yeah. I still think that yet. Somewhere in there, if he can rein in some of his worst instincts, I think Zack Snyder still has really good movies in him.
I think he needs someone who can tell him no. Someone who's like, nope, we're not doing that, Zack. Move on to something else. He needs someone else to write it. He needs that person to be on set the whole time. And ideally, the person who writes it and the person who tells him no are the same person. Because it's just like, nope, we're not doing that. You're going to do this. This is what I wrote. You're going to do this. Or this is what was written for you. You're going to do this. If he had that and it was just, Zack, make this look beautiful, he would make great movies.
Yeah. And I wish, yeah. And my big thing is I wish he would stop playing into, because yeah, there was the one time on a stream with some of those people that he said something and they kind of went, whoa, are we the baddies? Is he talking about us? And he was talking about them.
And they turned on him. Yeah. And they turned on him.
Not for long. They're still, but
nope.
The thing that he does shit like he'll tweet out a picture of Darkseid and he's like coming soon, and because he knows they're gonna lose their goddamn minds. Oh my god, we're getting it. We're getting Justice League 2 and 3. And all it is it's an announcement that they're gonna show the black and white Justice Snyder cut in theaters for one weekend somewhere, whatever, you know. But he's smart enough to know what that's going to do.
Yeah.
To the fan
it's
base.
Intentional.
And get them all riled up again. And that sucks. Stop doing that. And then after Justice League is Army of the Dead, which I had not watched because I was off the Snyder train. I watched it again, or I watched it in preparation for this, just so I had seen the whole filmography. Mm-hmm. It's fine. I mean,
yeah,
for a Zack Snyder movie, yeah, it's kind of subdued. I feel like maybe that's just a Netflix budget thing, because I kind of feel the same way about Rebel Moon. The visuals are not up to his usual standard, I think.
Yeah, we'll get into it, but it's actually the thing that shocked me most about Rebel.
It's fine.
Movie,
it's
honestly.
Not terrible, but it's not particularly good. It's just a zombie. I mean, the idea of a heist movie during a zombie apocalypse is pretty cool. And I do, again,
great idea.
Again, things I want to give him credit for. Him firing Chris D'Elia and replacing him with Tignataro is pretty dope. That's
best
a baller move.
Done. Yep.
And I love him.
Nothing
for
but
that.
Respect. Nothing but respect for that. Great move. She's much better and obviously a much better actor anyway. But beside the point, baller move, 100% with you on that one. Nothing but respect for that. If more people did that, like nothing but respect for him.
But yeah, Army of the Dead is it's fine. It's a thing you can watch, but it's nothing special. And I think you can tell, even amongst the Snyder people, that like when it first came out, we're like, here we go, Snyder's back, Army of the Dead, and then very quickly quieted down. And the same thing happened with Rebel Moon, where it was all hype. Oh, here it comes, Zack's new thing, Rebel Moon. And then as soon as they actually saw it, they kind of stopped talking about it. Because I think they watched it and went, okay, yeah, it's fine, I guess. And they will never not be funny to me that, I'm sorry, but Rebel Moon getting knocked out of Netflix's top 10 by the Joss Whedon cut of Justice League is hilariously funny. I'm sorry, everybody. That's fucking funny.
It is. That's hilarious.
But I think that Rebel Moon shows and proves again that it's not this massive army of the Snyder cult and worry about the go. They're just loud and have nothing else to do and have lots of free time to do it. Like, that's how they bombed or whatever that dumb fuck Oscar moment thing. Like, that's ridiculous. But they've either lost enough steam or were never powerful enough in the first place that they couldn't, that very quickly Rebel Moon dropped directly out of Netflix's top 10 and at the hands of the Joss Whedon cut. Like, not only is that funny, but also shows they are not the powerhouse that they would like you to think they are. I mean, you couldn't pick anything better to do it. Like, and again, bear in mind, I also think the Joss Whedon Justice League is trash too, so.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. It's a bad movie. It's a bad movie in all ways. But so we're finally at the movie.
We're finally at Rebel Moon. Here we are, an hour in.
You can edit a lot of my rambling garbage out, so you're okay.
No, yeah, you haven't said anything yet that'll get me murdered, probably. So I think we're okay.
And Well, as I said, as much as I don't like a lot of his work, I have no intention of being unfair to the guy or say that everything he does is terrible. But it's like, and as I said, like going into this, and I'll say this now just before we actually get into it, what shocked me the most about this movie was how ugly it is. It is so desperately ugly, and ugly in ways that I would not have expected, because I expect to go into every Zack Snyder project at least to see beautiful things. And this movie is incredibly ugly. And you were talking about Netflix budgets and all that. And I agree. They spent a lot of fucking money on this movie. Spent a lot of money on this movie. It was $83 million. Okay. For both hats, right? They spent a lot of money on it. That's a lot of money. And here's the thing. As I'm a production manager by trade, I make movies. And there was something I just saw in the new Shogun movie where they were doing a beheading and they do a camera move. So that the actual moment of the beheading is concealed, and then you just see something drop on the other side of this. So there's a concealing bar of a cell. And so it is, the camera sees the beheading about to happen. There's a camera move, and then something drops to one side. And I saw that and I went, do you know how much money that saved? And it's a great move. It looks really good on screen. It makes it look good. You know how much money that saved? Because they don't have to do a prosthetic. They don't have to simulate a beheading. They don't have to do any of that stuff. And my take on this Rebel Moon is it's ugly, and it's ugly in ways that could have been fixed if someone had just said, we are going to save money here, 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 and here. You don't need that third alien planet with the weird aliens. You don't need that. We're going to do that somewhere else. We're going to reuse this set. We're going to do that. I could have saved enough money that you could have made that movie beautiful. So either someone's not telling Zack Snyder no, or someone doesn't care about what he's good at.
Yeah, and I think that relates to probably my number one issue with Rebel Moon is that it's all world building. It's all world, like, it's just
it's
world
not,
building.
It's not even really world building. The Empire of Rome
but
should
to
sue
nothing,
this movie for libel. Yeah, slander. It's like, yeah, it's not even world building. It's how close can we shave Star Wars' scrotum world building?
Well, but I mean, as far as like, we're going to this world for 45 seconds, and you're going to see this alien race, this, and what's this guy with candles all over him? That's pretty cool. Don't fucking worry about it, because you're never going to learn about it. And maybe there's a comic book that Mags Visaggio did, and there's a novel, but no, you don't get to do that, because it's a movie and you have to tell me the story. And I don't want to hear, oh, isn't that what Marvel does? No, you can watch the MCU movies from start, the beginning of the timeline, to now. There's nothing, there's no comic book tie-ins you need to go read. There's no novelization you need to go read. There's no animated spin-off you need to go, like, it's all there.
Marvel drops world building in the narrative and in the post-credit sequences. So it's dropped in the narrative and you can see it, you can notice it or not as you wish. And then they drop it in post-credit sequences, which is how you do this. I have so many problems with this as a narrative, because there is no narrative. There's actually nothing happens in the whole movie. They travel to multiple planets and nothing happens except threats of sexual violence.
Well, it was obviously him, because this was pretty famously his pitch to Lucasfilm for a Star Wars movie that appears to be him just saying, hey, remember how George Lucas always said that Star Wars is based on like
the Seven Samurai?
Seven Samurai. I'm going to just make Seven Samurai. Put it outer space.
I'm just gonna,
and they went, no, you're not. And he went and did it without the Star Wars brand name on it. And it shows from the opening narration on. Because what the opening narration is describing is the Emperor and Darth Vader.
Yep.
1,000%.
But here's the thing. So the God Awful Movies guys did this as a bonus. And it's really funny. It's a very fun and funny thing if you're part of their Patreon. But one thing that Eli Bosnick points out is every bad decision in this movie is like an anti-lesson. It's like, oh, that's why the scroll in Star Wars works. Why the opening narration in this is shitty and terrible is why the opening scroll works. Because it's just like, here's a scroll slow enough for you to read. Here's all the info dump. Boom. Now we're in the middle of it.
Well, yeah. And it's also sort of one planetary sort of set piece, not even action set, because I was shocked that it's like 35 minutes into the movie before there's a hint of an action
anything
scene.
Yeah,
it's a and lot it's of a, it's... for Zack Snyder, it's very subdued, not only visually but in a way that should be good. It should be appealing to me that we're that he's slowing down. It's not action right off the bat. He's taking time for people to like have conversations. But then those conversations are not anything I remotely give a shit about. So it winds up being a bad thing. Like, I thought it would be a good thing, but it's, I don't know.
Well, it see, a, for that to be a good tactic, you actually have to have a conversation between characters that have functional brain cells. And every single person in this movie is has just been hit in the back of the head with a shovel, as far as I can tell, because there's nobody in the entire movie who makes a single good decision about anything, except the, maybe the robot. But like every piece of dialogue in that first 20 minutes of that movie is just either a cliche. It's badly delivered. I'm sorry, Sofia Boutella cannot act. Like, she's been good in some things, but she is not good in this. Maybe it's a script to director thing. I don't know. And so you just have a bunch of people that we like, a bunch of people we don't know and have no reason to care about making bad decisions and saying cliche dialogue. I did like the fact that they had to like have all of the bad guys either have Australian or South African accents, because apparently those are the only people that were allowed to be bad guys anymore.
Well, and also another problem is what's the moments of character development aren't, we're not getting through like seeing them do something or seeing them make a hard decision. What we're getting is Cora, that's her name.
Yeah, Cora.
His character. We're taking a break from the action so that she can tell you part of her backstory. And then we're on to the next action thing. And then the next time we have a minute break, she's going to tell you the next part of her backstory. Like, and that's all the conversation really between characters that we get. Yeah,
the theme of this movie is you are too stupid to understand. Everyone in the audience is too stupid to understand subtlety, and everyone has to state their motivations in plain language at all times. That's the theme of this movie, is that nobody can actually, every single thing that happens is stated by a character and then might happen, or they might just state it.
And we hope you really never saw Star Wars or Gamora and Thanos or like
Lord of the Rings.
There
Gamora
are a
Thanos,
bunch. There are
Game
there
of are Thrones.
Several movies that have a lawsuit
Seven
against
Samurai,
this movie.
Shane. I will argue Shane.
Lots.
Yeah. The Magnificent Seven, which is just, you know, same thing, same difference as Seven Samurai, but it's just like you can track this movie based, it rips off David Lynch's Dune. Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, at least Lynch's Dune was a grand Guggenheim high opera, you know, thing. But it, like, this is just like kind of pedestrian farmers.
I like the idea of the crop orgy. I've never seen that in a movie before. Where like their village is like, the way we celebrate the harvest is everybody fuck. And I was like, I can get behind this. I like this.
The inside of Zack Snyder's head, the psychosexual subtext of Zack Snyder's head is amazing. Like, dude, that's at least interesting. But I'm like, my whole thing with that is like, why in the future is everything just folk music? Like, I would, as I would love for like everything in the future to be like dubstep or hard metal or something.
Here's another thing. And it happens in this. It's a tiny problem I had with the new Dune as well. I don't need everything explained to me, but you need to explain to me, are these humanoid, very human looking and speaking aliens in a galaxy far, far away? Or are these human beings who have traveled here and it's far, far in the future? Because that is not clear in this film. I also don't feel that it's clear in Dune. Are the people in Dune humans and it's way in the future who have traveled from Earth to Arrakis? Or are they people who, just like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, aren't human beings? They just look like, you know what I mean? Like, they're from another
planet. Convergent evolution. Yeah, just a convergent evolution. They happen to look human,
because
right?
In Dune, there's a guy playing bagpipes. And I'm like, the fuck is this? Not like something like an alien version of bagpipes, like straight up Scottish bagpipes. And I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the same with this. You have this planet where the horses have, like, they can't just be horses. They have, like, bark on their heads. And then you have crazy bug people, and you have, but then there's just elk, just regular old elk.
Yep.
Pick
regular
one.
Elk, regular old humans, yeah.
But I don't know if these are
regular
future humans who
humans.
Have traveled far, or if they're aliens who look like humans. I have no idea. They never mention Earth. They never mention the before times or any of that. But then, like, why do they...
Dwarks, long time ago, galaxy far, far away. Good, cool. That's
all
about
you
it
needed
anymore.
To say.
Yep, that's it. You know, if you like, literally, you could do that even in the opening. I hate narration and voiceover as a general rule. You have to really sell me on why you need a narrator or voiceover. Like, it's, I don't like it. All you need to do was humans escape to the stars, and then you do the fucking narration. You know?
Yeah.
That's it.
Something.
One line. Yeah.
And I guess it doesn't even really matter. But when I see things like, yeah, when I see bagpipes, or I'm trying to think of an example in Rebel Moon of like, that's a real Earth thing they just had. Well, you know?
Yeah, everything's shaped like a gun. There are swords, and like, it's like there's enough human, like, why would they have like plows? Like, this is a spacefaring, these are spacefaring societies, and they're still plowing the Earth by themselves.
Well, I mean, look, that, right? Yeah, that. Well, and the bad guy, Noble, when he's talking to them, he's like, we can get you like robots to do this. You don't have to, like, if you had more money, why are you doing this all by hand? He has a good point. I guess they're poor or whatever. But that raises a very important question to me, which is, if the Empire, which is what this is, it's the fucking Empire from Star Wars, except dressed like Nazis, like literally dressed like Nazis.
Oh, yeah, they just raided a World War II. Yeah, it's raided a World War II Reconstruction Society, yeah.
Why do they need crops from this planet?
Yeah, why would they go to a bunch of humans on a poor desert? Yeah, why would they go to a bunch of humans on a poor desert planet to grow wheat for them? That's how you're feeding your intergalactic army, is with the wheat that these
bushels of wheat.
Grow? Yeah, and like, here's my whole thing. It's just like, I watched it when I'm watching this with my friend Angela for the second time, and I fixed this movie in 5 seconds. I said, all you need to do is he's not there for the food. He's there to either find Korra, or he's there to find what's his face, her love interest guy. Because that guy knows the rebels, and he's just using the weed as a pretext, and he's actually just here to grab that guy. And that's your opening conflict, is that he's here for that.
Well, yeah, you know? They finally like, found the tracking beacon or whatever for her escape pod that we never see, that she crashed
in. And it's
in.
Here. Yeah.
It's somewhere on this planet. We're going to find it. That's something.
Yeah.
But the idea that the Empire has to go, and it, because this is like the second in command of the Empire, right? This is your Darth Vader. Really pasty Darth Vader. Why is this planet? You would think you must have 8,000 planets getting grain for you if that's how you're feeding everyone. Why is it so important that this one planet Darth Vader has to personally come to and find out why their wheat crop is like, it's,
I mean,
dumb.
Wheat's not even that nutritious, but but it's just like, my whole thing about this is like, at least I saw this and I'm like, well, I mean, Ed Skrein is just leaning into his destiny as a bad guy. Like, he's just bad guy. You know, he is, you know, creepy bad guy in all the way. And then I saw that Fra Fee was Belsarius. I'm like, Fra Fee also leaning into his destiny is, I'm just going to be the bad guy in movies.
Yeah, I didn't even know who that guy was. But
he was in the Hawkeye TV series. He played the main antagonist in the Hawkeye TV series.
Oh, shit. You're right. Mm-hmm. That's true. But
that's
Ed Skrein,
why I know
is
him. Yeah.
The villain on Deadpool, the first Deadpool movie as well.
Yeah, his destiny is he will always be creepy white guy bad guy.
He's got that face, though. There's not much you can do.
Like, he's just no one's lean.
You can't put him in a rom-com.
He's
a jump scare.
He's just leaning into it. Well, I would put him in a rom-com as an assassin, because I actually have an assassination rom-com, which is a, I would put him in as that guy, because I think he has the chops to deliver comedy, but it's just like he's unsettling to look at, so yeah.
The guy who plays Gunner, who's sort of the love interest farmer type.
He's just some random dude. I barely know him.
Well, he's Mike, if I can pronounce it right. It's Michael, it's like Herman or Hersman. He was on Haunting of Hill House.
Oh.
Good on that.
Husman, yeah. Michael Husman or Michelle Husman. Yeah. He's imminently forgettable in this.
Well, they all are.
Yeah.
I mean, fact that at one point they go and they pick up Jaiman Hansu, who should be the second he's on screen, should be the thing you cannot take your eyes off of.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes later, I forgot he comes on screen again. I'm like, oh, right. Jaiman Hansu's in this movie.
I remember two things. Wow. He hasn't worked with Anthony Hopkins since Amistad. And two, man, he looks good for a guy who's almost 70.
Well, he did not work with Anthony Hopkins on this movie, because Anthony Hopkins did not spend a day on this on a set. He was in a bathroom. He was in his bathroom with the door shut, calling phone, literally phoning this shit in, because he's the narrator and the voice of a robot. Yeah.
How much did they pay Anthony Hopkins to Zoom call this movie in?
Which, I mean, look, you can get it, but then I don't know. I feel like you don't get to then be like, oh, Thor was fine, but Thor was no acting required. Like, buddy, what do you call this? Like, it's just say you like to get a paycheck. Everyone needs a new pool. It's fine. Just say that.
Yeah, it's fine, man. You got kids. You can leave them. It's fine. Even if you don't use it in your lifetime, you've done enough. You've got kids. Yeah, man. It's all good.
If you never have to perform another day in your life and you can just phone this shit in, go for it, man. You've done enough.
Yeah. Nothing against that.
But don't bullshit. I actually like the robot. Jimmy the Robot.
I thought the robot was so stupid.
But I like the idea, the initial concept of this is a robot who was built for one purpose, war, and defending the king. And when the king died, they just like lost all drive. And now they literally can't fight because that's all their orders to fight for. That's a cool idea.
They
do nothing with it.
My notes about the robot are, why are you bullying the robot you brought with you? Because, like,
so
if the robot had belonged to the community, maybe I could see that. Like, one of the soldiers going, hey, where did you get that robot? That's a warrior robot. Oh, he's never done anything but, you know, do this for us. And then my other issue is, why is the warrior robot programmed to blush?
I mean, yeah, that's pretty dumb. But, well, I mean, again, we know the bad guys are evil because they're going to rape this girl. And we know they're dumb because he's going to... That robot is right now, that robot's purpose is to lug this shit up to the barn so you don't have to carry it. If you shoot that robot, you're going to have to carry all the heavy stuff by yourself, idiot.
Why are you so dumb? You're pulling your own robot. You're pulling your own robot. My whole thing about the whole thing as well is like, is this the only, like, okay, so just the bad guys, soldiers who all have Australian or South African accents are making veiled threats of sexual violence to this young blonde girl, who Sam, who is in the village. She is constantly carrying water, and this is apparently the only well in the entire village. It happens to be right by way that where they are. There's nowhere else she could go. She's carrying water 24 hours a day, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, how are they irrigating these crops?
Yeah, they don't have one well. Apparently, it's just
is she going out and watering them all at night, one row at a time.
Yeah, this one blonde woman who's just wandering up and down the village, you know, dispensing water.
And poor Corey Stoll. Between this and Quantumania, 2023 was not his year, man. I mean, look,
I liked MODOK.
He probably got a good. Oh, I hate that so much.
I
hated it so much.
He probably got a good paycheck to do very little.
That's
work,
the thing.
So
he probably made a lot of money in 2023, and good for him. But I think he's actually okay in this.
He's fine.
It's a pretty thankless part. Yeah. Before he's.
Yeah. I don't know why you would waste.
Clubbed to death.
Like, I don't know why you would waste Corey Stoll in that role. Here's the thing. It actually almost seems selfish to waste Corey Stoll in that role when you could give that role to an actor who actually needs the exposure and get them a credit that they could use. And like, to me, it just seems weird because like, it doesn't matter. His character never matters. He's just random white guy who leads the village.
Or you could also improve this movie, in my opinion, by letting Corey Stoll be the Han Solo type that helps you out. And Charlie Hunnam is the useless tribe leader who gets killed. Because then I have to watch less Charlie Hunnam.
Okay, I will say this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's terrible.
Cannot act his way out of it.
No.
Paper bag.
He was good. He was good in Pacific Rim because it's not a role that requires you to have any actual emote at all. You don't
That's
need to
the
emote.
Thing. You're there for the robots. Who's paying attention?
You just need to look good. Exactly. Yeah. And here's the thing about Charlie Hunnam is, as I said, you can tell, and I'll point it out when we get to the point, but you can tell the exact moment he is just off camera holding a broken bottle to a producer's neck demanding to be written out of the film. You can tell the moment. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's when Charlie Hunnam was like hammering back whiskey going, write me out of this thing. Oh, he's terrible. He can't act. And he's, I mean, I kind of like him as a human. He seems like a pretty decent guy, but he can't act.
And I'll admit, I never watched a second of like Sons of Anarchy, so maybe he's,
me neither.
Maybe he's great in that. Who knows? But
he's not. He's
of the things I've seen him in, he's not great.
He's one of those guys that when you put him in a very specific kind of character part, he's fine because he's just playing the exact same thing over and over again. Like, I think he's in the he's in a new Guy Ritchie movie where he just plays this sort of dude who like delivers very menacing lines very calmly, and I'm like, oh, that's fine. It doesn't require him to act. He's a decent looking man. He's fairly he can look tough. So it's like when you put him in those roles, he's fine. He's made an entire career of being vaguely tough looking blonde guy, and that's fine. I don't begrudge him, but he can't act.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, and there's been several of them in the last 10, 15 years that are always, it always seems like this is the next guy and we're going to push him. And then it just, they never break through. And then they're just kind of back down to doing, you know, there's a
Yeah,
bunch of
they'll
those
always
guys like that.
work.
They're like, this is the next guy. And then,
Yeah.
maybe not.
Yeah, they'll always work. It's like they're trying to make him, it's always the guy they're trying to make the new Heath Ledger, but they lack what Heath Ledger had, which was charm and talent.
Yeah, that's true. Why is so much of this movie out of focus? It's crazy to me.
Yes.
And
It's
not
so
in a
ugly.
purposeful, I don't even mean in an artsy way or in like a, because of how you're like, it's not like a diameter shot or something. Like it's, there's so many times that things are just drifting in and out of focus in a way that does not seem purposeful at all. It
It
seems like
looks like
it's,
someone
we just don't have time
tripped
to
and
fix it.
it looks like somebody tripped and threw Vaseline at the camera and they just didn't get a new camera. You know, it's like it's one of the most astonishingly ugly things I've seen in a long time. It's just the everything about it is like the set direction. I was watching this in my head the first time I saw it. I was watching it with my production manager hat on, going, if someone had come to me with this storyboard, I would have been like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to figure out a different thing to do because the one thing that you're good at is visuals, and this looks like shit.
But it almost seems like a technical defect happened or something because it's not like, you know, ordinarily, okay, what's in the foreground is in focus and what's in the background is out of focus. And then if you need to swap
You
so we're
can
paying
rack,
attention to the
yeah.
background, you rack the focus. But there'll be times
Yeah.
like people will be talking and everything's normal. And then right behind the person's shoulder just suddenly goes out of focus and then back into focus. Like, what is
Yeah.
happening?
It was like the camera operator didn't know how to use the camera. And he was the DOP. And he was the DOP. So there's a good chance he was behind the camera a lot of the time. I'm wondering if he even had a camera operator for some of it. And I'm like, I'm wondering if that's just him not knowing what he's fucking doing. I don't know what they shot this on. It was
I
probably
don't
a
know.
red because a lot of it's digital. So I have. They appear to have stolen these bad guy costumes from the set of a World War II movie and a low budget ripoff of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, the world building that means nothing. Because everywhere that Noble, the bad guy, the Darth Vader goes, he has this retinue of people with sort of alien-looking masks on and big, yeah, like Handmaid's Tale, kind of these big bonnet hats. What is their purpose? What are they called? What do they do? Why are they following him? No clue ever. You will never
They
be told. They're
never
just
do
there for
anything.
a visual pop behind him. But
They do this in
they
Star, but they do this in Star Wars, but they do it for a reason. There's all of the white stormtroopers, and then there's the Red Guard that comes with the Emperor. The
yes,
thing
but the
about that is
second
that
you see
instantly
them,
you
the
know
second
what
you
you know
see
why they're
them,
there.
you know why they're there without them ever having to say, these are the Imperial Guards, look at them. And they look very cool, whereas these don't look cool, and we don't know what their purpose is.
They're just, and that's the whole thing about that is they spent a lot of money on costumes and a lot of screen time on that for nothing, for no payoff. And that's just, to me, that's bad filmmaking.
And you can say, and someone defending this might be like, because this movie has a 100% cantina scene right out of Star Wars, except we've traded your droids can't be here for I want to rape your friend. I mean, it's otherwise it's the exact same scene. But and they would say there's just random aliens sitting around the cantina too. Yeah, but there's just something about it feels different, and that's not even me trying to be a hater. Like in this the Star Wars cantina scene, you see like a hammerhead guy, and you're like, wow, what's his deal? And you never
So
find out. But
here's the problem. You can't copy something that is that integral into the social consciousness of humanity, which is like Star Wars is one of the most visually recognizable, even the cantina scene, one of the most visual. You can't copy that lazily and sloppily for no reason. If you're going to copy that, you have to do something with it. And they don't. They're just kind of go, as you said, this is the cantina scene, and then they don't do anything with it. So all it is this is just a rip off of the cantina scene. Like, I get what you were trying to do, but you need to make it important in some way. You know, like every single person in there turns out to be part of a hive entity or something, and that's who tells you like something. You
or
know?
the guy there who's got the bug thing like hooked up to him and is giving like talking through
Yeah.
him, that's cool. Tell me more about that. No? Okay, never mind. I'll just forget I saw it. Like, it's what that's what I'm saying. It's world building. It's stuff. It's just showing me things that are much more interesting than the main things you're taking time to show me in the movie. And then you're off to the next thing. And I don't care what Cora's doing. I want to know about that guy covered in candles. I want to know about the guy with the bug attached to him. I want to know why Noble has tentacle hentai creature in his room. What's that doing? Oh, go fuck yourself. Okay, I will.
Yeah, okay, here's also never thing explained. About that scene. The scene in the cantina is like, notice this. The only people that have any kind of importance or narrative drive at all are the conventionally attractive looking human characters. Everyone else is either a, you know, potential rapist or a side character. But I like to point out they have like two aliens or three aliens. They have rapist alien. They have candelabra bartender who I agree looked amazingly cool. They have cool, weird alien parasite. And then everyone else in that bar was just like a dude in women's clothing.
Well, there is an old black guy smoking a pipe. Who I appreciated.
True. Yeah. And it's just like, I'm like, and then every character you interact with is who has any kind of point at all is just a conventionally attractive human. We don't even have a Chewbacca character.
Well, and another thing that I think that bothered me about this movie is it's saying things like, oh, we're in the port city of whatever.
Providence.
The port city of Providence. What makes it a port? Because if you're telling me it's a port city, you know what I need to see?
A
fucking ocean.
Or a spaceport.
We don't see an ounce of water in this entire movie.
Yeah.
And they do the same thing later. The spaceport at the end where Blood Axe's people come and they're like, tie those ships off. What do you mean? It's floating in space.
You mean Bespin ripoff? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like floating, but it's set up like a dock on the ocean. It even has like big things with ropes wrapped around them. And you're tying... Yeah. Just land the ship. What do you mean tie it off? That's ludicrous.
Yeah.
The port city of Providence. What makes it a port? If you have spaceships, you can just fly and land there. That's not a port. That's every city. It's no different.
You gotta show me a port or a spaceport. You gotta show me ships landing on a spaceport. You gotta show me something. What you showed me was an Adobe hut.
It's just, I don't understand. What makes it a port? If you have... Mm-hmm. Space travel, every place on the planet is a place you can port, is a place you can land. That's not a port.
Yeah, and my notes about the scene were, you know what Star Wars was missing? Sexual violence, as we said, yeah. And then, oh yeah, and here's my whole thing about this. It's like, this is me. You know me. I love fight scenes. I'm a martial artist of 30 plus years now. I talk about fight scenes all the time. I love fight scenes. If you're going to do fight scenes, at least make them look interesting. Cora does nothing interesting in any of her fight scenes. She's supposed to be this amazing, badass, genius warrior general. And all she does is pocket sand at one point and then gunnier than the other people. And she just shoots people and her plot armor protects her. And like, she doesn't even do anything interesting. She just shoots people and gets saved a couple times, once by the robot and once by Kai, Charlie Hunnam's character. I'm just like...
I was going to ask you, as someone who...
Yeah.
Has been involved with film production and fight choreography specifically.
Yeah.
Does shooting things in slow-mo make fight sequences, does it make it easier to hide things or harder to hide? You know what I mean?
Harder.
Does that make any sense? Like shooting stuff in slow-mo, does he do it? Because I'm wondering if he does it so much to hide bad fight choreography, or does that actually make it easier to spot bad fight choreography? I don't know.
Yeah, it makes bad choreography easier to spot. It has specific purposes, like there's one of the worst crimes of fight scenes was caused Lethal Weapon caused a problem with fight scenes for about a decade, because Lethal Weapon's fight scenes are very good, but they're shot very fast and they're edited very fast, and so you can't actually tell what's going on at any point. So they're close up and shot in fast edits. So the way if you want to shoot fight scenes really well, you want to show what's going on, is you need to pull back. The farther you back you pull in a fight scene, the faster you can edit something, because people have more time to visually take stuff in. Slow motion is if you want to show a very specific move. And so the problem with it is if you're going to use slow motion in a fight scene and then not do anything interesting, all you are doing is showing every flaw in the motion that you have. So it seems to me like I genuinely think he doesn't understand what looks good in a fight scene. He doesn't understand. He thinks slow motion is cool, so he just applies slow motion to everything. He applied slow motion to Ed Skrein walking out of a ship, for the love of God. And I'm like,
or spilling
no.
Seeds or
like slow motion. There are times when slow motion has been used very well. I've seen he's even used again. He used it extremely well in Watchmen. That scene with Ozymandias. That's exactly why you do it. But it takes a lot of setup. These days it's a bit easier to shoot slow motion than it used to be because it's digital. But like you can change things on camera. Like in the old days, you had to actually like change out all the film and have the whole thing. You limited amounts. But like I think you could probably argue, some people might argue that it does make things easier to hide. I don't personally think so, and I haven't had the experience where slow motion on a film set has made anything easier to hide. It's actually made choreography and setup and positioning and all that much more difficult. Maybe he's doing something that I'm not technically aware of that he likes as a director. I don't know, but like my problem with it is not that he's using slow motion, it's that he's not using it to any great effect. It's just, oh look, here's a character moving from one part of the screen to the other.
Well, that's the thing. He is always, every movie, even the ones I like, has always been more concerned with what looks cool.
Aesthetics.
To the detriment sometimes of character, story,
yeah,
logic,
style over substance.
Like that.
Yeah, style over substance, which is fine.
A perfect example in this. They're like laser guns or whatever. When they hit stuff and like lava flies off, that looks fucking cool.
Yep.
But it doesn't make any sense then that you can put one of those guns up to someone's head and fire it and it just makes a little hole. Their head should be a pile of meat.
Yes.
And I know it's not an R-rated movie. But
here's the thing as well. How do laser guns run out of ammo? And multiple times she reloads ammo into a laser gun.
Maybe they're not laser. Maybe it's like they're like molten slug throwers or something. Because this also rips off a lot of Warhammer 40K. Let me tell you what.
That was my next note. Now we're copying Warhammer 40K.
But yeah, it looks very cool, but it just doesn't make any sense. The physics of it makes no sense because it should hit someone and just turn them into mush.
From a writer's perspective, the scene in this bar is hilarious because all they're doing, they're standing in the middle of the space libertarian bar and just shouting their secret plans. Like, hang on a minute, what are you people doing? Every single person who has a secret plan in this movie just shouts it out loud in rooms full of people. And I'm like, Kara, aren't you supposed to be hiding from the bad guys who want to crucify you alive? Like, why are you just standing in the middle of this bar and yelling your plans to everybody in the vicinity? What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, I said it's 35 minutes before there's any action at all. And what you have, on one hand, it's interesting to me that he has slowed a movie down and brought it down to just people talking. But what they're talking about is so dull. Like, this movie is so dull. Can you imagine wanting a longer version of this?
Yeah, that's, I mean, they're going to talk about soil fertility some more. Yeah,
not me.
Like they spent 5 minutes talking about soil fertility. Okay.
Yeah, it's the Phantom Menace. All the talk about the Senate. It's that.
Yeah.
But with soil fertility.
Do you want to? Do you want to go from? You want to go from Providence, from the bar
in
Providence?
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes here. I kind of just want to burn through this because
there's not a lot of plot,
and we've been at this for 2 hours already.
Yeah, so, we can just burn and talk. Just burn through the plot, and we could talk about generalities.
Let's see. I mean, at least the sexual assault isn't limited to women, I guess.
That's
a bonus. I wrote Charlie Hunnam as Han Solo. I mean, Kai.
Yes, who, again, just keeps constantly shouting his plans and motivations out loud. Don't worry about acting, Charlie. We'll just have you say the thing you're going to do out loud. And I believe the next thing we get is the tentacle porn.
Yeah. Ed Noble, the bad guy, is like sitting and he's got all the, like, he has like sucker marks all
ports.
Over him.
And some of them are ports or
some
something.
Some of them are ports. Because
like,
he's half robot, or we don't know. He has a, maybe, does everyone have ports in the back of their head? I don't know. He does it when they resurrect him at the end. Whatever. Again. Yeah.
He's some sort of android or something, and he's into cephalopod only fans.
Yeah, there's some kind of tentacle monster that's doing stuff to him in his room, but we don't really see much of it. Or
I would have loved it if the guy who walked in, had been completely freaked out.
Well, yeah, if there was an ounce of comedy in this movie, like even a hint of levity, yeah, that guy should have come in the room and been like, "Sir, but what the fuck? I'm sorry, I'll come back." And then you make him come in and watch, like, "No, come here. It's interesting for you to see this.
It's really uncomfortable." Yeah. That really sexually something. Uncomfortable. It would at least have been funny. Yeah.
And then I have, yeah, there's Griffin. That the horses are called,
oh, Griffin Rider
Urakis, which yeah. in the subtitles looks a lot like Urukai to me, which
yeah,
don't do that. But yeah, this is what I'm talking about. They have griffins, like a straight up from Harry Potter fucking griffin, which looks cool yep. and all. This scene goes on way too long of him trying to tame this thing. But you have griffins, you've got these Uraki horses, but then you have regular elk and regular old dogs, just a dog. Just yep. dogs.
Just dogs.
Fetch dogs. Shouldn't the dogs have yep. displacer yeah. beast tentacles or something? Nope.
Yeah, it was just a very nice Cane Corso. I'm like, oh, it's a very lovely dog. It's a very lovely Cane Corso that you have there. I wonder
it doesn't belong here. Where it's from Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's from Earth. But like my whole thing about Griffin Rider Boy is that okay, they're trying to rip off the whole Lance, we're gonna bet on this kid thing from Phantom Menace, right? And I'm like, well, here's the problem. They bet on that kid because they know he has magic powers. They've never met this dude. Why are they betting their freedom on a guy they've never met doing a thing that they've never seen anybody do? Admit, why is this bet happening on any level? Why is the dude offering the bet? Why are they taking the bet? Why do they need one half-naked guy with a hammer to beat the space empire? What is the point?
Well, also, it is a ripoff of Avatar. It's 1000% the scene from Avatar when he's yeah. has to tame the flying thing. But also, that's a fundamental problem with all of this. Isn't why do you, on top of why do you need this specific person and how did you find out about them? But also, why are they signing up? When you yeah. show half these people, you show up. Like for the lady who's clearly in the original script was a Jedi because she has laser swords and is a monk type character. She's Asian.
And a tiny little witch hat.
And a weird little Puritan witch hat. But there's no conversation of like, here's why you should come and join our team.
Yeah, here's your special skills. Here's what you're useful for. Just like,
we've come to see you. And she yeah. says, hang on, I have to deal with this spider lady. And then the next thing you know, she's in the crew. There's no conversation of here's why we need your help. Why are yeah. all these people leaving their planets to sign up on this suicide mission? We have no idea.
With a bunch of weirdos that, and here's the thing, like, isn't this woman that they're like, wasn't she the adopted daughter of the main evil bad guy? Wouldn't they at least know her face? It seems like maybe somebody, her face might be out there, you know, like. But here's the thing. One thing I love about the Griffin thing is at one point it looks like the Griffin notices that it's in a Zack Snyder movie and gets angry. Because it looks directly at the screen and goes, what the hell? Is that an audience? And then it gets angry. And then we get Witch Lady, Jedi Lady, who's fighting the spider with boobs.
And look, and again, this spider lady is very cool. I need her to be, that should be the antagonist of like the entire second act.
Yeah.
Or something.
They should have to rescue
somebody. We need to go into her lair and get this thing. And we see, like,
yeah.
It's a throwaway fucking action scene that lasts 3 minutes.
Yeah. She's got important intel in her lair. Yeah. She's got important intel in her lair.
Half an hour of Spider Lady. I'll take that over half an hour of these two sitting around talking about, oh, when I was in the army.
My notes about Spider Lady scene was, I like how Hunnam's accent drifts from one side of the British Isles to the other, because he sounds vaguely Scottish in this scene. And then, give me a Spider Lady with boobs, shouts Zack Snyder from the bathroom where he's doing coke.
Now, I don't know that he does coke. Let's bring it down a notch.
I know, I'm sorry, that was probably mean. But that was those were my extemporaneous notes.
That Spider Lady was Jenna Malone, right?
Yeah, Joanna from Hunger Games, yeah.
Or from, she's also in Sucker Punch, and he's used her in stuff before. I just couldn't tell, because I saw on the IMDb that she was in this, and I was like, where was she? But I think that was her.
Yeah, and like, I would, again, I'm with you. Like, if the second act of this movie is them having to get something from Spider Lady and having to fight their way into and out of her lair, that's a great second act. And the thing is about that is you could show them bonding as a team doing that and their special skills and the whole thing. You can actually have an actual moment of team building if that, but no, it's just like, no, tiny little witch hat lady kills her and then joins and then gives a weird sanctimonious this is nothing to celebrate moment and then like, oh, by the way, I'm gonna leave this planet I protect to join your crew. Why? You don't know any of these assholes.
All this world building, there's zero team building. They go to a place, meet this person, say, hey, come with us. They go with them. They go to the next place. They have the same conversation with the next person. And there's no, we don't spend any time seeing them bond or understand why by the end of the movie, they're willing to die for each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And trust then, like, each other. They shouldn't.
And then we get, And then we get the info dump with the flashback to the princess and like, oh, maybe she has magic powers. She just brought a bird back to life, dumbass. She's got magic powers.
Which again, like, and because you know when you're making, oh, they're giving us a part two, so we're going to do part two, so we don't need to explain anything now. We can save stuff for the sequel. That's not how movie making should work. And don't say the MCU does that, because no, it fucking doesn't. This little girl means nothing in this movie. Yeah. And maybe she'll be important in the next one. Maybe.
Oh,
but it's just, I was supposed to protect this kid. She can bring birds back to life, and we'll never talk about it again.
And yet somehow I am mystified as to why she would be important. She has magic resurrection powers. Of course. But here's the thing. Sam, water girl from the village, that's the princess, 100%.
Oh.
100%. Korra and her went on the run together. Korra faked her death. They crashed. 100%. That's the princess. That's why the robot likes her. The robot's going to turn out. Pretty sure the robot's going to turn out to be the downloaded spirit of the king or something.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that because it seemed to me like Korra.
No.
Because they talk so much about how Korra like just got here two seasons ago. They don't say that about the other girl.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to turn out to be. Anyway, that's my theory. My theory is Sam the Water Girl is the princess.
What else I got? I got, Jaimin Honsu's in this for no apparent reason.
Then they started ripping off Guillermo del Toro at one point. Oh, yeah, I don't like the fact that Jaimin Honsu is found drunk in a gutter. That's not a super great. I'm not a big fan of that as imagery.
Well, I think I know it's easy to look at that and go like, oh, like the one black actor in your movie. But I it's very possible that that was just part of the script before they had cast anyone. Yeah. And then, oh, we cast Jaimin Honsu. Great. We're not taking the time to change that. Like, you know, I don't think it's a malicious. I think it's just not thinking about it.
I wasn't a big fan. However, Jaimin Honsu does look ripped as fuck. He looks fantastic. Big fan of him shirtless in this movie.
Yeah, he's always great when you give him more than three lines to say in the whole goddamn movie.
Yeah.
Maybe in the next one. But you know what? I'm not going to watch the next one, so I need you to give it to me now.
He seemed so uncomfortable in this movie at all times. Like every line of dialogue he delivered, he seemed so uncomfortable. And now we get to my favorite part of this movie, which is me continuously shouting, why is he wearing a tie?
Oh my God. I have that exact note. Why is he wearing a tie? !! Look, I love Andor, but Andor did the same thing. Why are these motherfuckers wearing literal ties?
Yes, why are they wearing ties?
This noble in this movie has a button up white shirt and a black tie, and you're telling me this is galaxies far, far away, alien beings who fly around in spaceships, and this fucking guy's walking around in a button up in a tie. What is happening?
Yeah, my notes, every sixth note is just, why is he wearing a tie? It's all going
and it drove me crazy in Andor too. Like, some people were complaining about the bricks in Andor, and I think that's stupid because every society, every culture ever has built things out of bricks. I figured out how to make bricks. Yeah. Like, that's a stupid complaint. But a necktie on your shirt, and the ones in Andor are actually worse because they don't even like go under the collar of a shirt. It's just hanging there as like decoration, and it looks fucking stupid.
I
liked Andor a lot, but that shit drove me nuts.
Yeah, Andor is brilliant, but not. It wasn't always brilliant.
But yeah, man. This is either a galaxy far, far away, or it's the distant future. Either way, no way we still have neckties. Forget it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we barely have them now. Like they're in modern society, they've only been around for a couple hundred years and we're already getting rid of them. You know? So here we get into the bit where like we get to the blood axes, which is the stupidest name in the whole thing. Two blood ass siblings and their army, which is apparently like nine people in like five ships and some motorcycles, some flying motorcycles.
Yeah, and they all have like Furiosa and Fury Road, like the black across the.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what's the deal with that? Like, oh, somebody's coming to visit. Quick, everybody put your eye makeup. Because there's no way they're like that all the time, just sitting around the clubhouse. You have to get ready for that look. So it must be like, shit, a ship's landing. Everybody, quick, get your mascara out. We got 2 minutes. Get ready.
And my notes on this is we're an army fighting a rebellion. Millions of people are going to die. And we care about your village because...
That's what I'm saying. What is the importance of the grain from this one? And also, are you telling me that that entire planet or moon or whatever it is, I guess it's a moon because it's a rebel moon, right? That's the only village?
Yeah.
This entire moon has just this one village on it?
That one village and that one port.
Port city of Providence. Don't
go off planet. Yeah.
Why do you have a port city for a planet that or moon that has just one village?
And apparently that village of like 30, 40 people is what, farming the whole moon?
And is so important to the economy of the empire that they must cut. It's so dumb. Like,
they produce, apparently this one group of 30 people using primitive tools is, and apparently this one chick who draws all of the water are like providing the nutritional supplements for an entire galactic army. This seems like a poor logistical
setup. It does. And I don't know if this is him sort of stealthily, if this is kind of aimed at his fans as like, look, Ray Fisher, like obviously he brought Ray Fisher back, but there's so much unearned gravitas surrounding this Darren Blood Axe character from his, like, they land, they have a conversation where he's like, no, sister, we should go fight with them. And then he gives a rousing speech to his people. And we've met all of them 25 seconds ago, but this rousing music where we're supposed to be like, yes, he's finally rallying his... We met this fucking guy 15 seconds ago. You have not earned this gravitas. And then does it again when he sacrifices himself to take out the cannon on the ship.
And fails! He fails to do it!
Well, he does make the ship crash, but that just actually makes their situation worse. But
worse,
he dies doing that, and we're supposed to be like, oh no, not Darren Blood Axe. Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
He's had a collected 45 seconds of screen time. Who could give a shit? Why do you
think... It's Charlie Hunnam is singing a song to himself in his head. It's not just staring blankly to the middle distance, and me and these six guys will join you. Don't you care a lot? No, I don't care about any of you. I just met you. You've never done anything.
I wonder if the idea there is that there's supposed to, for Snyder fans, there's supposed to be this ingrained, like, oh no, not Ray Fisher. We just got him back and now he's dead. But I don't have that because I don't give a shit about Justice League. I don't give a shit about Ray Fisher. So,
and his performance in this is atrocious. I don't know whether he's a good actor or not. I didn't think he was very particularly good as Cyborg, but yeah. You know, I don't blame him for it necessarily because I need to see him in something else, but he's wooden and awful in this with absolutely no, there's nothing about this character that makes me care about him at all. Like, here's the thing about Harrison Ford. I'm not the biggest Harrison Ford fan on the planet, but you see Han Solo, you just liked him. There was a charisma there. There was some energy behind that performance. This character, there's nothing there. My take with the Blood Axe thing is like, why do they care about these rebels? Why are they doing this? Why are they jeopardizing their rebellion by splitting their forces for a bunch of assholes they've never met who are protecting a single village on a single moon that grows wheat?
Well, and especially since it would be one thing if everyone in the crew knew each other's secret. But what we get is this big sort of parlor scene when everyone's captured and Noble comes in and reveals the dark secret of everyone. Oh, you're secretly a prince, and so are you, and you're the greatest general of all time. I bet you guys didn't know that. And she's like my stepsister, kind of adopted, whatever.
Yeah.
And no, they didn't know that about each other. He's revealing that to them. So they had extra no reason to follow these people. It would be one thing if it's like, oh, you used to be like second in command of you used to be Darth Vader, and now you're a good guy. Like, I'll follow you. You know what's up. Oh, you were General what's his face? Cool. But they don't know that until it's too late.
And circling back to the beginning of the movie, so when this dude who knows her, who is deliberately going to hunt her to bring her, who's probably hunting her to bring her home, why is she standing in the middle of the village with her face completely uncovered, staring at him?
She's kind of like coquettishly hiding behind this statue.
All he had to do was turn his head 6 inches.
Yeah, later on he's like, I saw you at the village. I thought there was something about you. bullshit. She has a different haircut. That's it. You would have instantly gone, hey, I know you.
Hang on a minute.
The most wanted fugitive in the universe, he says.
Yeah, you're the adopted daughter of the guy who will kill me if I don't bring you back for him to murder. Like, I know you, right? And like, so now we get to what I feel here. So we get to budget Bespin. We get to the Wish version of Bespin. And my thought here was space opera building guidelines. Handrails are for pansies.
Yeah, for sure. That goes across a lot of things.
Yeah, and Cora, the brilliant warrior general, might not have seen this very obvious betrayal coming.
Yeah, well, in reality, she should have been betrayed every step of the way. Because we know, like Noble says, you're the most wanted fugitive in the universe or the galaxy or whatever he says. Mm-hmm. Why is Charlie Hunnam, who's just in it for money, waiting until she collects a bunch of other badasses who could beat him up? Yeah. Why doesn't he just turn on her immediately? Yeah, why, when they walked into the shitty bar, the cantina, why didn't everyone in the bar turn to look at her and go, hey, it's the most wanted fugitive in the galaxy. Get her.
Exactly. Like,
she can't be that wanted, I guess.
It's clearly Charlie Hunnam's character, Kai, knew who she was from the moment he saw her. So all he did was take her around on a little tour of several planets to gather allies to make his job more difficult.
And no one else recognizes her.
Yeah.
Pretty dumb.
And now, so we get to kind of a fight scene here. There's everyone on the bad guys is dressed like they shop at Abercrombie and Fascist is the way I put it. And then it's convenient that the killing gun also unlocks the torture scorpion.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to skip ahead to here, but we get to this bit where Ray Fisher's going to sacrifice himself, right? He's going to like run up and stop this cannon ship. Mm-hmm. And what I wrote was, they did Ray Fisher dirty here, because if your actor looks that awkward running, doing it in slow motion is just a shitty thing to do to the guy.
Yeah, there's a couple people in here who's running. You're not Tom Cruise. Their running is not as photogenic as you might think.
Yeah, what if you watch just that section with Ray Fisher running up this gantry, or Ray Fisher stunt double running up this gantry, it looks bad. Like, it does not look athletic. It doesn't look strong. It looks awkward and shitty. It looks like Ezra Miller trying to run as the Flash.
I was going to say, that's pretty maybe Zack Snyder's good at a lot of things, but filming people running just might not be one of them, because the way the Flash runs in that Justice League movie is laughable. Yeah,
and
laughable.
We got stuff like, there's a battle going on around him and Noble is just not reacting to anything. He's just kind of standing there, like, looking. And there's, like, people being murdered.
My just, stick like, got Noble's broke.
Just kind of, yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I'm a stick fighter. I love sticks, but why is the leader of an intergalactic army's main weapon a stick?
Just a cane, yeah.
It's just not even two sticks. Two sticks at least look cool. It's just a stick.
I will say, I did think that the final fight between Noble and Cora, kind of on the little buoy out there after the rest of the most of the rest of the dock is collapsed. I mean, they should all be fucking dead from that explosion, but never
mind. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Cora and Noble on this buoy. I thought their fight scene was kind of cool. Like, it was, and it was, again, for Zack Snyder, felt really low key, because there's not a lot of slow mo. There's not a lot of, like, you would think for the big climactic thing, there'd be a lot of CGI, what's it's flying around or something, but it's just two people having a pretty brutal fist fight.
It looked okay.
It was pretty all right.
It looked okay. It looked to me like they ran out of money. Is what it looked at to me. So they were just like, well, we have to do. It looked to me like they were planning something different, and they had to just do it all on this one little set because they ran out of money. I did like the fact that they were mostly using the two actors, which does limit the choreography a little bit, because they're both very athletic people, but neither one of them is a trained stunt person, so there was some limitation of the action. In particular, that thing where she breaks his arm, she's just bending it in the correct direction that it's supposed to bend.
The first time, I noticed that too. And I see that in some movie, where you're literally just bending your elbow the way it's supposed to over someone's shoulder and then screaming. And it's like, no, man, we can see that, right? You know?
Yeah.
There is the second one where she kind of twists it. That one looked better where, like, she kind of.
Yeah. And they used it, but they used the prosthetic for the second one and they didn't on the first one. And that strikes to me why they ran out of money. I don't think they had two prosthetics.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah, and my whole thing about that is that's actually a fight-ending move. You do that correctly, what they're trying to do, which is the elbow break. you're turning the inside of that joint to gravel. Okay, you that arm is probably irreparable. Well, in our technology, that's irreparable. If you do that, that's a crippling move. He's in so much pain, he shouldn't be able to move, but we don't know whether he's in it. Here's the thing, if they'd set up properly earlier that he was an android who didn't feel pain, then it's fine. But I'm just like, she does this what should be a fight ending move, and then they keep fighting. I'm just like, oh, I guess he's an android who doesn't feel pain. But it's just like, it was pretty good. It wasn't bad. I did like the fact that, again, they use the actors, which is always great. And that means there is limited choreography. But watching it again, it really felt like two things. It felt like they ran out of money. And I don't know if Zack Snyder shot that, because it looked so completely unlike any fight scene I've ever seen in any of his movies. I'm wondering if that was second unit. And the second unit director.
Or maybe it was him trying something different, because I'm of two minds. On one hand, in some of his movies, you know, I don't appreciate just bombast for bombast's sake, and at the detriment of other things. But the ending of this feels so subdued that I'm like, I could have used a little bombast. Like, the fight scene is cool, but like, this is pretty anticlimactic after all this. Just a fist fight. I know it's just part one, so maybe who knows what'll happen in part two. But yeah,
they keep trying to sell big emotional moments with characters whose names we don't even know. You know, like this after Darian Bloodaxe dies, his one second in command, who's a non-binary actor and a non-binary character, good for Zach. They give this speech or something about Darian, and just like, yes, character whose name I've heard once and don't remember. I'm so moved by your sacrifice. Like, I don't even know who any of you are. Why would I care?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of unearned.
You have to earn, yeah, exactly. Sure. You have to earn this kind of maudlin garbage speech, and they're treating it like it's Captain America at the end of Winter Soldier.
Yeah, and Noble falls off the thing. Like, he also like falls 100 feet onto some stuff,
and rock and water.
Is basically dead. But then they come, like the Emperor scooping up Darth Vader at the end of Star Wars Episode 3 and hooks him up to some tubes, and now he's all better. But it also sends him into like the dead zone. the ice lake thing with the fish swimming underneath, I thought looked pretty cool.
Okay, the
but you're
the,
not explaining the, what this psychic waiting room is or whatever.
The extremely obvious metaphor of being on thin ice, we're just gonna beat that to death with, you know, yes, before we get there. And then movie, you have not earned the soundtrack was my other
well
note.
One thing that I did appreciate about this one maybe is that it doesn't have a bunch of like modern music sort of needle drops throughout it, which I'm sure was a very like a temptation for him, because he's done that. Watchmen has some good ones and some not so good ones. What was crazy was, I know you haven't seen Army of the Dead yet, but I'll give you a guess. See if you can guess what would be, as the credits start at the end of a zombie movie, what would be the absolutely most obvious needle drop?
Oh, Christ, was it Cranberries Zombies?
It's Zombie by the Cranberries. Can you fucking believe it?
I'm
you
really
said it as a joke.
I got that. Yeah.
But that's what's actually in the movie, and I laughed my head off because,
oh,
sir.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh. Oh. I okay, so okay, we have this confrontation between Noble and Belsarius. So we have the confrontation with the two guys, and they're talking about, and Belsarius is talking about, you found my daughter, I want to crucify her in front of the Senate, the whole thing, and then Titus is still alive. Woohoo, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And then we get to back to the Rebel Moon. And they're like doing the Seven Samurais, the Magnificent Seven. We're gonna ride across the plains and go. And all I could think of was, if the moment they see the village, the King's Gaze appears, blows up the village, and flies away, this is my favorite movie.
Roll credits. I mean, I'd be a lot more interested to come back for part two if that was the end of part one. If they're like, "Yay, we won!" Fuck you, nuke the village. Yeah, I'd be like, I want to see where this goes. But as it stands, it's like, okay.
But here's the thing as well. Like, this is how they actually have what's-his-face Griffin Rider guy say, Noble's dead, no one's hunting us anymore. Then why did they come back to the village? If they think Noble's dead, why do they care? Why didn't they all just go out and fight the rebellion somewhere else?
Because they're a family. They're a found family now. They all love each other because they've spent an hour and 8 minutes on a ship together. I know.
Anyway. I feel, again, here's Zack Snyder shouting from the bathroom again. Do you think they know he's supposed to be Darth Vader?
Yeah, the parallels are not subtle.
Yeah.
But that's, I'm done with this, man. That's Rebel Moon. I did not hate it, but it's not good.
It's not worthy of hate. It's not worthy of hate. It's not good enough to be. It's not. It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't trying hard enough to be good to be worthy of hate. It's just a bad movie. It was $83 million spent on a bad Star Wars rip. $83 million.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I don't. I know what you're saying. I don't begrudge Zack Snyder his career in any way. You know, it's hard work doing what he does. It is a lot of hard work. People think that directing a movie is easy. Don't know what they're talking about. It's something I don't want to do. I don't begrudge him his career. I don't begrudge him the tries he has made to do things.
Well, and especially since looking at what he has coming up, I wish he was at least doing something like, I got a new idea, I'm going to try a new thing. But his next his next movies are sequel to Rebel Moon.
Yep.
Sequel to Army of the Dead.
Yep.
Sequel to Rebel Moon. Sequel to Army of the Dead. Like, his next four movies are sequels to his other, I know he's in a Netflix deal now, but
yeah.
It's just
do something. Rebel do a rom com
zombies for the next 10 years. That's all he's doing.
Do a rom com. Do a kids movie, an actual kids movie. Do something interesting. Do something. Do a spy thriller with no special effects. Do something other than this. You're very, very good at visuals. You are a brilliant cinematographer. Please, for the love of God, lean into that. If you have someone else direct, as I said, that's what I would do. If I was him, I'd be like, what am I good at? Oh, I'm a good cinematographer. Fine. I will DOP the next movie. Someone else will direct. Someone else will write. You will give me that money. I'll give it to somebody else.
And that's Rebel Moon. That's the end of Request Month. Back to normal.
I'm so sorry.
So it's that time that I press the magic button to see what next episode's movie, once again chosen completely at random from everything streaming, will be. I'm pressing the magic button right now. Next episode's movie is Trash Fire, two words, from 2016. It is on Tubi and Amazon Freevee and Peacock or Pluto TV. So lots of places you can watch that for free or close to it. Trash Fire. What is this? Who's in this? The guy from Entourage is in it. Adrien Grenier. And
that's not a ringing endorsement for me.
Trimber. Okay, Angela Trimber, she's cool. I don't know. It says it's a comedy and a drama. All right, Trash Fire for 2016. That's everybody's homework for next episode. We'll see what that's all about.
Heath and your listening audience, I would like to apologize for doing this to you.
No, you know, I wanted to get a lot of this Snyder stuff off my chest because I've avoided talking about Snyder at all on this show, so I might as well get it all out now and then never speak of him again. And like I said, to anybody, if you haven't turned this off yet, if you're a certain demographic who came here for a certain reason, like I said, I don't dislike the guy at all. I think he's a decent person. I've liked a lot of his movies, just not the ones you like the most. And I have my reasons.
Yep.
And can't we all just get along? I probably like all kinds of shit you don't like, and you probably like some shit I don't like, and we can just, you know? I don't begrudge that you like it. Just shut up about it. You know? That's all.
There is no moral component to what you like, but understand, and I don't mean you as in you, I mean you as in general you. What a lot of people don't quite understand is two things. Just because you like something doesn't make it good. Just because you dislike something doesn't make it bad. And then the other thing is you don't like something because of its objective quality. You like a thing, a creative act, because of how it touches you emotionally. And then you post hoc justify that emotional reaction with objective qualities. I despise a lot of objectively brilliant things, like stuff that, like, nope, that is objectively a brilliant movie and I hate it. I love some things that are objectively bad. It's, you don't,
same.
Your emotional reaction to something is why you like it, and you post hoc justify it with objective truth after that. And that's totally okay, and it's totally cool to have a discussions about that, but understand that you don't like it because it was destined to be a good thing. You just like it because you like it.
And also, more people need to understand the difference between objective and subjective, and that they are not the same thing, and they're not interchangeable words to just throw around. Because you'll see sometimes things like Zack Snyder, or whoever it is. I don't care who you name, you're wrong. Probably. Zack Snyder is objectively, not in my opinion, objectively the greatest filmmaker of all time. A, please God, watch more movies. I know you don't even believe that. When you typed it and hit send on Twitter, I know you don't honestly believe that. You're just
being
so
an edgelord,
part of your personality that you can't back down now, or you've wasted all this time and you'll feel bad. Like, believe me, I understand. My favorite movie of all time is The Crow. I would never in a million years say that The Crow is the best movie ever made. I would never say Alex Proyas is the greatest living director. That's just the movie
Crow.
That came along at the perfect moment in my life to seal itself into my brain and my heart in an unimaginable way.
Yeah. If you're gonna
I know
ask
there
me,
are better movies.
Yeah. Objectively, the best movie I've ever seen is The Godfather. It's not a movie that I actually really enjoy that much, but it's objectively the best movie I've ever seen. I don't like it, you know, but it's just like the movie that I love the most. Honestly, it's Age of Ultron. I love that goddamn movie.
Age of Ultron is very underrated.
Yeah, I love that.
It has my favorite scene of any MCU movie is in that movie.
Which is? Which one?
The moment when Captain America could clearly lift Thor's hammer if he wanted to, but he looks over and sees the look of shock on his friend's face and doesn't do it to spare Thor's feelings. This nonsense about, oh, he's finally worthy come endgame.
No, he was always worthy.
No. He was always worthy. Probably more worthy than Thor ever was or ever has been. He could have. Mm-hmm. He's about to lift that hammer and he doesn't stop because he can't lift it. He stops because he doesn't want to hurt his friend's feelings. That's amazing. And
it's perfect.
That's good character building and that's good writing. And you can say whatever the fuck you want about Joss Whedon versus Zack Snyder, but there is not a moment in a Zack Snyder movie that tells you that much about a character without saying a goddamn word.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. There's a lot. Yeah, there's a line in Age of Ultron, and this is going beyond what we're talking about. You obviously cut it, but there's a line in Age of Ultron. There's several lines in Age of Ultron that mean a lot to me. It's Black Widow. When Black Widow says, "All my friends are fighters, and I finally meet this guy who doesn't want to fight. I am a fighter. I have been training to fight dudes for 30 years. I fight dudes. I beat dudes in fights all the time." That was the most perceptive statement about being the kind of cishet woman I am that I've ever heard ever in any media. All my friends are fighters, and along comes a guy who doesn't want to fight because he knows he'll win.
And like, it was written by a shitty dude who, say what you want,
it was written by,
is a good
written
writer.
By a terrible guy. Written by a terrible man who understands narrative structure like the back of his goddamn hand and writes dialogue like nobody else on the planet. You can't take that away from the guy. He's good at what he does. He's just a terrible human.
Which happens more and more and more.
Yeah, and we just need to stop putting up with it.
Artist is an interesting.
Yeah,
thing
I don't
to
see. I don't separate. Yeah, I don't separate art from artist. I don't believe you can, but it is possible to say that a terrible person can make great art. It's just that we need to stop putting up with. We need to stop assuming that you have to be a terrible person to make great art. You don't.
Yes, that, and also, and there's a difference between, well, now that I know this thing, going forward, I have no interest in giving this person a cent. But that doesn't erase all the things in the past that they have done that have touched you, or, you know, like, again, Joss Whedon is one, Warren Ellis probably is another one, who, for me, is a big, there's so many Warren Ellis comics that I love.
I love, and you know what? I got into Castlevania.
In the future, but the ones I have, I'm going to continue to love.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. There's terrible.
Or Bryan Singer movies is another great example.
My whole thing with this has been from the beginning. Liking something made by a terrible person, having an emotional connection to it, does not mean you assert what they believe. It does not mean you support them. It does not mean that you are a bad person. Refusing to examine your connection with it does.
Yes.
Yeah, because I have examined my connection with Joss Whedon's work and a lot of the shit. Like, I am going to get a tattoo of words that he has written, which is "live as though the world were the way it should be to show it what it can be." That is absolutely one of the most meaningful statements I have ever experienced in art. And it was written by somebody who is an objectively terrible human being. I gotta take the dog out. So, and we've been talking too long.
Pee. Yeah. So we're gonna go on behalf of myself. Who knows? This is gonna get cut to shit. But on behalf of myself and Lisa Jimino, Everybody have a good week, and we'll see you back here for Trash Fire, I guess.
What a thematically appropriate follow-up.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Hey, thank you very much for letting me do this.